half a day today. And I'm going to request that we run our affairs in as prudent manner as possible. I'm going to save even on the time allocated for both the opening and the apologies. We have three entities today, USASA, SAPO, and BBI. We have a few apologies. The minister, the deputy minister, both of them will not be attending. Obviously, we're not expecting them. We also have one member, Madam Ketabahle, the EFF rep, who has a bereavement and she's not going to be in the meeting. And that accounts for item one and two. And are we fine, members? Thank you. I'm therefore going to allow for USASA to come in. And if in the process of the meetings they serve us with tea or whatever else, just feel free to move in and out and pick up so we don't have that strict and fast rule that thou shalt not eat in the meeting. So just feel free and grab whatever. There's water at the end and other refreshments. Just proceed. And yeah, so the first on the line is USASA. The board chair is here. Board members is acting the CEO, CFO, company secretary, and the rest. And then SAPO represented by the board. Mr. Ngidi, CEO, CFO, and company secretary, and BBI, the chair, CEO, and CFO. Because I do not quite know all of the people that are involved. I know members here may know the people, but I don't. I'm going to just request whoever will be speaking to quickly just do very short introductions of their delegation. And apologies, I can't sit there in the front. This thing is very heavy on my eyes, and my eyes are relatively old now. They are almost a pensioner's eyes, so I have to try and save them. USASA on the floor.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And let me. Oh, sorry. Let me forget this thing. Thank you, Honorable Chair. And morning, members, honorable members, and morning, colleagues, from different institutions and DGPS. With me, without wasting time, I've got my members sitting around here. You might think it's a huge delegation. It's just that some of them are staying here in Cape Town. To my right, I've got Jabulile, who's Gosi, who's a member of the BAC committee, which has extensive experience. We've got the acting CEO on my left, Sipho Ngcebese, who's acting on behalf of our suspended CEO, Mr. Lumko Mtinde. He's been at USATA for a long period, from 2010. He has extensive experience at executive, and before that he worked for DOC and also ICASA. And when we're looking at for a person to act, we as board unanimously actually voted him as the best candidate. So he's going to carry this ship whilst we're busy with the sort of disciplinary process for the CEO, who's also applied for a court, labor court agent application. One, for him to come back to his job, but secondly, to actually offset or stop or interdict the disciplinary hearing based on all the legalities he has put forward. And we've also responded. The case is today for the labor court application, and the disciplinary hearing is tomorrow. Next to him, we've got the CFO, Mohammed, who's been with us. I mean, the members are aware of him by now. Then the recently appointed Mr. Ndaba, who's in charge of the operations. Then we've got Mr. Ndaba, who I suppose everybody knows him. He's been in the telecom industry, ICT, for quite a long time. He's also working, as we talk, in the government and so on. Thank you. Without wasting time, I want to say, share the members that
Just 1 second, there's a hand, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to inquire about the position of the board. Has the board communicated to the Chairperson officially or to the Secretary with regards to the disciplinary process of the CEO?
Yes.
if we could have copies of that, because we have not received any copies of any sort of background documentation on the suspension.
Okay.
And I think that is due process, because we hold the board accountable. Can we please ascertain from the secretary and or from the chairperson?
Yeah, I think it's a very important matter, Chair. I mean, Madam Killian, I have not been cited on the matter. I don't have any correspondence from what, Ajira?
I haven't got any.
Okay.
What we'll do, we'll go back to our offices and then check whatever correspondence, if it's none, because we've been communicating, and also GPS is part of the communication group, we'll make sure that we get it. The process of
In this regard, you there's a bit. It's not something that we can just deal with it and get over it. It's a compliance issue. It's a compliance issue when certain actions are taken by the board or against the board. Immediately, the portfolio has to be cited. We should know. Because we play oversight over the entity, and so it does become a problem. It does become a serious problem if committee is not cited. I mean, it can't just be as business as usual, because we have a view on some of these kind of activities. We hold a view because we have seen over the period that from time to time board members would take decisions, rightfully or wrongfully so, sometimes recklessly, and people get away with it. Sometimes officials take decisions over the operations of their entities, and they run it as if it's their spaza shops, and it has spurred. We run government. And therefore, issues of governance are very crucial in what we do. And so, I mean, I'm just saying, it's not something that we could just say, okay, it's fine, I'll look at it and brush it over. It's a serious problem, because we don't have an accounting officer, as it's because it has not been communicated to us formally. So it's a problem. It's a problem. I mean, for instance, when I read the apologies I read of people who are supposed to be here and they are not here. So it's a formality. It comes to the chair in writing. So everything of that nature should come to the chair in writing. I say we have a view because sometimes we do give advice about the board's advice that they should act appropriately according to the law. Because failure to do that, we do expect of people to take responsibility. You know, sometimes people, it's easy for people to litigate with public funds, things that they wouldn't do with their personal funds. And we would want to make sure that when decisions are of that nature are taken, people should know that this is almost a personal matter. So if we lose a case, as you were speaking about the case going on, if you lose a case, it can't be the entity that has not budgeted for litigation that would fund those litigation. In the last meeting, I know in the last round, we did say it is time that people who take decisions to litigate, especially on labor matters, they should actually be prepared to pay out of their pockets. We've done that already. We did it with the SABC, and I think SABC board, and I think it's time that we such expressions happen in all our force so that we avoid recklessness. We don't say boards must not take decisions, but those decisions must be taken when indeed there is wrongdoing, and we should be cited about what the issues are. You know, we should be taken into confidence by the board chairperson in this regard. Your presentation must end by 10 o'clock, so you have literally 40 minutes. You actually will have 15 minutes because the other matters, it's something that has just been piloted through the committee and procedurally, so it's eating your time. But I don't know, members, are you fine? Can we proceed? But I think those things that we've said are very important, and we would want to deal with them. But over to you. You've got up to 10 minutes. I mean, up to 9:40. Yeah. Up to 10 to make your presentation.
Let me hand over to the acting principal without wasting any time for you to take that.
Thank you, Chairperson, or the board of the committee. What I'm going to do, because I've prepared a presentation that is going to help the members to be able to navigate through our annual performance plans. And I will start first with USASA. With your permission, because of the time constraint, what I'll actually do is that I will not go into the vision, whatever. What I will concentrate at is the USASA program and the MTEF process for USASA, then go to USASA. So in terms of the presentation, that is on page 8 of the presentation. Are you there already?
Was it, it's your time that you are using.
All right. The first strategic objective we have is the one that speaks on improved risk management services. Because as the HNC, we have these projects on broadband and the DTT, which they are a high risk exposure to the agency and the board. And this is why we decided that let's stratify that and let's ensure that at least we achieve 75% of that. Then the second strategic objective we have is the one of the increased utilization of the ICT system. At USASA, we have invested in a safe system, and we've invested close to 43 million rand. And what we have decided to do now is that we have two key performance indicators there. The first key performance indicator, it measures first the percentage availability of the system to USASA and USAF as a business. Then the second one, it measures now utilization of the system. So we want to ensure that every employee at the organization, they are using the safe system so that on monthly basis, we are able to generate utilization reports and be able to account to say that since we invested so much, this system is the value that brings to the business. Then the second slide is a slide that I'm going to ask the Chief Financial Officer to speak to, because it's the funding that regarding the program one.
Thank you, Acting CEO. In terms of this presentation here, what you will see is the funding for the program one of USASA. What we presented to members here in the first two columns are the previous last two financial years. Then the third column has the 2017-18, the financial year which we have just concluded. And then going forward is for the next, for the MTEF period, for the next three financial periods to come, where we've listed. The key number to look at is right at the bottom, which would then be the total expenditure for program for us to succeed in program one. So that would be from, for the MTEF period, it would be from your right-hand side, the third last column, and then going forward then for the remaining of the MTEF period. Thank you.
Then the second program that we have is the Business Intelligence Program, which involves planning and research. And we have there two performance indicators, the first one being that we need to these places that we have rolled out broadband to do an impact assessment study, and at the same time we have another key performance indicator that now speaks to the digital development fund, because we want to have a transitional plan in place. We don't want to be in a situation whereby once this bill is approved, then it becomes a law and there's no plan as to how now, as you start that, we translate into the digital fund. And I just want as well to bring to the attention of the members that if you compare the 2017-18 APP and this APP, you might have noticed that there's a reduction of performance indicators, because initially they were 24. Now we have since reduced them to the only 5, so that we are able to focus and be able to deliver in our objectives. But those ones that we have reduced, we're gonna put those into there in the operational plan, which now will be cascaded down to each and every employee and have performance contracts that now are gonna be not on quarterly basis but on monthly basis, where we do monitoring of those. This is why we have decided as FS rather a more of a manageable APP, but at the same time we overload an operational plan where we can be able to foster accountability.
The last shift in the scheme, well, in the last on the slide.
In this slide here, honourable members, we've put down for the MTEF, it's the last three columns, the funding that is required. Again, I draw your attention to the bottom line, the total expenses, in terms of the funding that is required to meet program number 2 under USASA.
Then, my second presentation is on the Universal Service Fund. And I want to draw your attention to page 4. Of the presentation. The first program there is the broadband program, where now as the agency now will be rolling out a broadband infrastructure using the Universal Service Fund to Musa Hill and Port St. George. The reason for this, we are aligning ourselves with the South Africa Connect policy, because Musa Hill and Port St. George, they are at the Oakham Tambo Assistance Authority, which is listed as part of Phase 1 SA Connect policy. So this year will be then, once we done, we will have managed to conclude Then the second indicator we have that I must explain is one of the number of the existing sites with internet connectivity maintained. Now, what we have done this time around, we have a list of 636 sites which we have connected over the past 24 months. So on quarterly basis, we must be able, using the list which has been provided to the department to the APT, to say that if we have 564 public schools, we must be able to match the portfolio of evidence to that 564. If same as the thing is, we must be able.
Yeah.
Sorry, Chair, I'm a little lost. I just want to make sure that I'm following. I was originally thinking when you said page 4 of USAF, I was thinking it's page 14.
Yes.
And then, but then we just want clarity where you are at this stage. And, if, you know, we find it sometimes very difficult to navigate through documentation if you jump. Thank you.
Yeah.
my humble apologies about that. It's painful. The one that speaks about the number of existing sites with internet connectivity maintained. We have about 6,006 sites that we must maintain throughout the year, emanating from the previous broadband sites that we've got 24 months on the contract with. So those, they are comprised of 5,004 public schools, then 111 clinics, and one public office. Then if you go to key performance indicator 3 under page 15, now we have new number of sites with internet connectivity maintained. Those ones, they are the sites that we have connected for Nyangeni and Event, because we needed to separate those so that when we are accounting to Parliament, to vote and the Minister, there's no WCP. We can be able to demonstrate the total number of sites that we have connected. Then in terms of the sites that are connected for both Nyangeni and in Bender, we have a total number of 2,075 sites, meaning 187 is the public schools, then 32 is clinics, then we have connected 16 public offices. By public offices, those are the offices of municipality that the municipality requested to be connected. And at the same time now, we'll be providing 43 public ones, Wi-Fi hotspots for communities. And with this as well, we'll be reporting not only on quarterly basis, but we want now to report on monthly basis, so that when it comes to the quarter, it's actually a matter of just consolidating. And the manner now in which we want to work now, because connecting South Africa is not only a responsibility of the government. It needs a collaborative approach where we want to collaborate closely with institutions such as ICASA, such as CPF, such as Broadband Infraco, and CETA, because they need as well to come on board and assist us so that we are able to provide services to our people. Then another program that we have planned for is the digital migration program. And if you look at it, in terms of the digital migration program, one of the things that I want to bring to the committee now is the reduction in terms of the funding which we have received from regional treasury. There's about 450 million rand which has been taken by national treasury. As a result, we're going to only be able to procure 22,282 boxes, which to me is something that the committee needs to look at. But the CFO will talk more on it. And the last indicator that was not on the previous APP, which is new now, is the indicator that talks about the percentage completion of all UNAP projects. What we want to do now is that we want all our projects to be managed and to be completed within a set time and the resources, so that we don't have projects every time when we come into Parliament and saying that we haven't completed. At USASA, we have a system that is already having a module on project management, where all the SLAs, the project plans, they are loaded, and we want to report on that so that we are able to complete our project on time and be able to report the well on all the SCM matters. If there's any deviation needed, needed to be done, we are able to communicate to board and the ministry.
Honourable members, in this slide here, the main item, as the ACO has drawn attention to, is the fact that we were advised that our budget was reduced by National Treasury by 250 million rands. So in terms of what we can actually achieve with the remaining portion of the 37 odd million rands in the program is then only the 22,000 boxes. How we get to that number is it's a blended cost, which includes then your STB, your set-top box, and your antenna slash dish, as well as the installation. So that is where this is where the big problem is in terms of the funding for USASA, of specifically USAF in 18-19. And that's what's depicted in there under the for PDM, the 37.88 million under the 2018-19, which is the main matter to bring to members' attention on this slide.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Are you done, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. You've done it within record time, which is appreciated. Normally, I allow members to reflect on the matters of today. Members, apologies, I just want to kickstart the reflection on the document. First of all, this kind of binding is not what is acceptable as an APP. If you were to check to all entities led by the department, is all of them are bounded properly so that you cannot interfere with it to remove the documents. So it's inappropriate, and it's actually doesn't look good. That's the first thing that I would like to raise. The second matter, when we met with the Auditor General, he raised the point that of the entities in the department that they had indicated the non-compliance to the SMART principle. You are one of those entities that even as you rework your document, you did not adhere to, you didn't deal with all the items that were raised by the AG. So what it means is, as you just start the process, you already are up for a qualification, because you ignored a simple advice by the AG to craft your document so that it is SMART. Now, I want to walk through quickly your document, this one. Page 4. The foreword by the chair. I am pleased to present the USASA strategic plan for 2017-2021. Now, I don't know what you are referring to here, because we are not expecting a strategic plan at this time. We are expecting the last part of the APP. So, but you will tell us what it means, because the strategic plan is not a moving target. Strategic plan is something that you were supposed to have presented in 2014. Which would last up to 2019. But in the presentation by the acting CEO, he did mention that there's one item that was not in the previous APP, the last item that he presented. One would assume that if you bring such an activity, you then attach an addendum, not a complete APP, but not a complete strategic plan, but I've not seen the strategic plan. Now, and on your line On your line, open paragraph 1234, you talk about what the agency will be doing in 2017 to 2021, which is obviously in line what you were saying there. This is out of line. I mean, surely you will not find any other document in this portfolio that has captured the things the way you do. Yeah, and you continue with that narrative of 2017-2021, which is totally out of line. Now on page 5, the continuous support from the Portfolio Committee on Telecommunications. We don't have such a portfolio. So, Chairperson, you can't break the law and change the name of the portfolio. I mean, all these things are just not inappropriate and irregular. It's some level of recklessness. And what is interesting here, you had made a provision for the minister to sign, and it has not been signed. I don't know whether I've got the wrong document. Okay. Now, on page 8, where there are signatures, your clause number 2. Okay, let me read the whole thing. I hereby certify the annual performance plan was developed by the management of USASA under the guidance of the Universal Services and Agents, USASA Board. We prepare in line with current strategic plan of USASA. It was prepared in line with the current strategic plan of USASA. Now, if you are saying this plan is according to the current plan, one would assume that you are referring to, which one? Which one is this one? As against the one that you are referring to, which is the... You refer to strategic plan 2017-2021. Now the current plan, which one is that one? It's not very clear. Now, on page... I think it's page number 9. Page number 9, you've listed your acronyms here. But when you go through the document, there are close to 20 other acronyms that have not been explained, which makes this document very inappropriate. It just doesn't indicate that you were serious in crafting this document. You know, the lecture on the course, I was a little exciting, if it is true. The interveners are like, you were just doing an inappropriate compliance. We are going to submit something, but I want to tell you what I was. It looks very, 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 it's, there is a lot of other information here, just that I was here, written here, but because even when you go to page 17, you are reflecting to dates past. See where you talk about your employee engagement, 2016, 17, 2021. All these things, it really, one does not understand what this document is referring to, which term is it talking to. Now, page 21. Page 21. I was really unable to understand what we are talking about here. You've got your targets. You've got your penetration measures. You've got your baseline. Your baseline is 2013. And then you've got year 2016, year 2020, and then year 2030. I just don't understand what you're trying to say and why is this thing even here in the first place. Now, and indeed your 5.3.4, your aim of 100% access to digital to all South Africans by 2020, which is fine, but because you have been raising things that for me do not belong here, I just find some of these things to be inappropriately included. Go to page 24. Your expenditure estimates. I don't know whether I've got the correct document. Ajira, you are the same. This one that I'm looking at. Yeah, year 2018-19. Go to page 24. Look at your expenditure estimates. You are saying audited outcomes for 2014, 2015, 2017, and then you've got this estimated performance, and then you've got this other thing. Your 2018-2019, that's now your okay, let me leave that one, let me just jump to which year are we now? 2018-2019. Actually, your document is very problematic. I mean, now, go to page 29. The issues that you're fighting here. Implementation of the risk management. Your quarter one, 75%. Your target for the year, 75%. Your quarter one, 72%. Your quarter two, 73%. Your quarter four, 74%. Quarter three, quarter four, 75%. Now, how do we measure this thing? As oversight, and how will you measure it yourself? I could hear you when you did the presentation, but it still didn't make sense to me. Perhaps I need to be educated. I don't see why, when you deal with risk, you would like to allow for a failure rate of 80% or 15% as it were. Why do you aim for risk management that is not conclusive? I mean, why? So it means what it is saying is in 2019, 2020, you'll then go to 76, 77, 78, 79, and then 20 whatever, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It doesn't make sense. It actually doesn't make sense. Perhaps I must... must allow members to come in. But yeah, there's just too many things. Your page 34, your 8.3, your reconciliation things there doesn't to make members, Madam Killian, Madam Sotesi, Madam Shin, Madam Baba Mackenzie.
Chairperson, yes. In that vein, I find it difficult to, in fact, bring the figures together. If we look at the program expenditure, can you please explain page 30? Medium-term expenditure estimate 2018-19. and its relationship with page 25, which is the budget estimate. Clarity about that. Then, Chairperson, just clarity about other revenue on page 24. What was the non-tax revenue that was in fact received in 2016-17 that was not received this current financial year and not perceived to be foreseen for the future? It's on page 24. I have already alluded to the fact that we have 80 million and 74 versus 79,465. Then, Chairperson, I am a little concerned about the program structure. I see that the presentation was done, all of it, on program one. Could we have clarity? Was that a mistake? Could we have additional information about that? Then, Chairperson, page 21, where it is foreseen that we should have 100% access to digital ICTs by 2020, but the SA Connect targets reflected on page 21 indicate 90%. On the same page, it is sort of also confusing. What are the real targets and how USASA is getting itself together to run to achieve it. Chair, I also have a little bit of a concern. We need clarity about the document sign off. You have already indicated that the minister has not signed. When was it signed and when was the CEO suspended? Because I note that his signature is on the sign-off. And I think the department will have to explain to us, Chair. They can't just sit here. We would love to hear from them. What is their perceived idea of this plan? We know that the Auditor General has expressed himself in a way that highlights some serious concerns in relation to specific SMART principles and achievable objectives, the real issues that will make success or a failure of the institution. Lastly, Chair, my understanding is if there is a change in a strat plan, that is a different process. If you develop additional indicators, it should actually go through a review of the strategic plan process in order to include that in APPs going forward. I have a concern. Do you have adequate management in the institution? Do you have an adequate understanding of the National Treasury and its processes and budget cycling and all of that? Or is that a serious concern for the board itself? Thank you, Chair.
I think a number of questions have been asked already. But I too want to emphasize on this one. I have a question mark on the signature of the minister. But it has been alluded to. And this one on the CEO, maybe it will come up again at the right time when we get into the details of his suspension, where there's a statement to say, in order to ensure complete buy-in, the board, management, and employees met and agreed upon what to SASA itself must accomplish, to what standard, and also blah, 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 blah. And the last paragraph saying, I wish to convey a word of thanks, as it says. So to us, it tells us about the smooth running of the management of the board. And the other one here, I think you have highlighted it when Chairperson was making his comments in the open about the suspension of the CEO, that you have done this in consultation with the department, and the minister knows about it, just to make sure I said what is written here, that the CEO is being appointed in concurrence with the minister. Obviously, he knows about the processes that are in place now. And the other one is that of capacity, that you have capacity to implement the targets that you have set for yourself. Initially, we had 24 and we reduced to 5. So one could just assume that you didn't have enough capacity. That is why you have reduced. So this time around, do you have capacity? And there's another page here, I'm looking for the chairperson, where it talks about USASA not being able to achieve the targets because of lack of capacity. Mm. I just want to emphasize that to make sure that you do have capacity this time around. And about the sites that you've connected and the ones that are to be connected, what is the proximity between the sites so that the majority could access? And the other one is the page 18 of the summary, the second bullet about the provision of equipment to identify underserved municipal areas. What informs the identification of the plans to be connected or the places to be connected? You know, there's a tendency of people focusing on urban areas only and, you know, at the expense of rural areas. So I would like to check if there's a balance between the two, the rural and the area, the rural areas. I'll end up there, Chairperson.
Madam Shinbaba Mackenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. My comment about the report generally, the USASA report, is that it mainly comprises sort of cut and paste from various developmental plans, NDP, SA Connect, all those sorts of stuff, and very little information on what actually USASA is doing. One thing that bothers me, though, is that somewhere along the line you're talking about planning for the Digital Development Fund. Now, that's years away. You know, I mean, that's not, you know, we're wasting an awful lot of time on that because, I mean, it's just an idea at this stage. It's not, as far as we've seen it, any promulgated or proposed legislation. So it's got to go through years worth of public process. The other thing that bothered me is that nowhere is there mention of the elephant in the room here, which is the corrupt set-top box tender process. And the impact that it has had on your targets and deliverables. You know, that, I presume, is the cases are still ongoing. That's going to take up most of your energy, I think, for the next year or two. And meanwhile, you know, it's all very well saying, look, we can go implement, what's it, another 28,000 STVs. But, I mean, if those are being procured by an illegal process, it's problematic for us. So please, can we have some indication of a why it's omitted altogether? It's fallen off the radar. Then on page 30 of the presentation, you talk about the information communication technology expenditure. Now, I presume that the main expenditure in 2016-2017, which amounts to 52 million, was basically the SAP system, the ERP system. If so, it doesn't gel with some other figure you have somewhere, which I've now lost. But then maybe there's other stuff apart from SAP included in that. And is the sort of declining cost, the 4 million, 5 million, whatever, is that maintenance or other equipment? Yes, I'm wanting to know, we talk about your role in SA Connect, and that I find it absurd that you haven't actually done any impact assessment, some evaluation of progress to date. You're actually only going to do that research now. How long has USASA, USAF actually been working on implementing those systems? Because, you know, last week we had presented to us Dot Zadner, and they didn't believe they actually needed to have measurable targets for their MA mandate. They just sort of happily go along doing their stuff. How effective you've been, don't know, don't care. But here again we have, you know, that for 5-10 years you've been ambling along and not actually measured the impact of what you're doing. Now you have, once you've implemented a site, you have support for 2 years on these sites. How many of these sites are maintained beyond your pulling out? How many of them have you sort of let go now? Obviously, if you can give us, fine, otherwise we'll get put in a formal question. How many of you let go to be maintained by whoever out there? Because you look at your 676 existing sites with connectivity. Now, how many of those are you still maintaining, supporting? How many of those have you let go into the wilderness? Which then brings me on to what negotiations underway, what handover documents are there when you actually hand over your system, say, to the municipalities or to the Department of Basic Education? Is there some kind of document that, okay, it's now your responsibility, or hand it over to CETA? Who is responsible for maintaining and supporting these sites once you walk away from your mandated 2 years? Then, yeah, and the same thing is going to go for the set-top boxes. You know, once you've installed them and they're working, you know, you step back from it. You know, there is, from what I understand, absolutely no support structure in place. If, I mean, some of us are really challenged when it comes to working a TV decoder. You mentioned the folks in out in the rural areas who are challenged with their, when their decoder doesn't work. Then on the whose presentation is USAF, page 18 of USAF. Is it page 18 of your presentation under USAF? You have a budget set aside for rapid deployment and connectivity. Can you please explain what that is? Are you part of the rapid deployment guidelines that is supposedly going to be happening with the ICT new legislation? Then also, what is your relationship or collaboration with CENTIC, which has now been declared the lead agency for SA Connect? Are you coordinating your rollout with theirs? Are they going to include yours in their figures? Are you working with them? What is the relationship there, please?
Baba Kulia?
Chris McKenzie.
Baba McKenzie.
Yeah, Vanga Chairperson. Just firstly, the proposed digital development fund, clearly that's been spoken about a lot. How has this impacted your organizational culture? You know, I'm asking this question just to give you a bit of context. If you know change is coming and you're kind of preparing for it, sometimes it can almost result in, you know, kind of a lame duck situation for a company where you're just waiting for direction. Has that had an impact on your organization, especially in terms of the planned rollout? Secondly, the 250 million rand that wasn't allocated by Treasury, did they give you a reason for that? They tell you why that funding had been withdrawn or held back? And do you know if there are any plans for them to reallocate that funding 6 months down the line in the medium-term budget statement? Do you have any idea around that? Then on your on page 15 of your presentation, on the USAF presentation, you talk about the connectivity of sites, and then over the page, on page 16, no, sorry, the previous page on page 14, the sites with internet connectivity maintained. I think the chairperson knows well enough on our first oversight visit that we made to SASA sites how much connectivity did not exist. What, because there was no mechanism in place that was monitoring those sites, given the number of sites involved here, what mechanisms or what resources do you have in place to make sure that connectivity is maintained? Because often I think you'll find that people are working at those sites, and we saw that in the clinic, for example, one of the clinics we visited in Mpumalanga, where the people were using their own money and their own resources to maintain their internet connectivity. So if they, firstly, what sort of reporting line do you have in place? Is there a number that they phone, or a particular department or key account individual that they engage with at these sites, just to make sure that connectivity is maintained? Then the chairperson alluded to this on page 29 of your document. 75% implementation of the risk management plan. Mm. I would argue that that's not a risk management plan if you're only implementing 75% of it. Because what about that that other quarter? It's a huge hole. So you're not managing any risk if a quarter of your risk isn't managed. So I would imagine that your target there should be 100% implementation of that plan. Perhaps you could give me a reason why you would be satisfied with 75%. Thank you, Chairperson.
You've exhausted all the time that we actually had budgeted for engagement. So we are on a tightrope. I'm worried whether we will be concluding on time to be in the chamber. But yeah, over to you, Madam, and then Mama Kilian Tekelele.
Okay, thanks, Chair. I've been covered too with other members and other questions. I've got only one question. Can please the chairperson of your SASA tell us where the CEO was working before they appointed him as a CEO? Thanks.
Mama Kilian.
Thank you, Chairperson. Actually, I just forgot. I also wanted to make a comment about the risk plan because that was also identified by the Auditor General. The Auditor General told us that the risk register was not updated in the course of the year, and that is a severe risk. And then also there was one of the risks identified in business operations was the sign-off on contract was done by a contractor. Clearly that can't be. What does USASA do to go and do on-site speed checks to determine whether the speed is indeed compliant with the policy? Thank you, Chair.
Sir, Chairperson and your team, we've actually exhausted your time, but
yes.
I want you to respond to the queries if you can.
Yes, yes, I'll be ready.
You're on the floor.
Thank you, sir. With your permission, Chair, I wanted to say all the issues you've raised under the binded document, which was
always forget this place. All the issues you've raised under the sort of binded document of USASA. Firstly, I want to say I apologize profusely for what you've picked up. I'm not sure which document was submitted eventually. We worked on it. In fact, we went through about 5 reiterations, so I'm very confused. So with your permission, what I'm asking that urgently, we go back and we check exactly which document the board vetted and actually were happy with. If you wouldn't mind, we'll do that very quickly. And strict instructions for you in terms of when do we respond accordingly, in terms of giving you the complete document, and we talk to DTPS about that document as well.
How much time do you need, Chair? Maybe 1 minute.
Yeah,
7 days. No, never. Look.
Then by Friday, Chair. Friday.
This Friday?
Yes.
Holiday.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's holiday. It's fine. They must work at night. You are granted.
Okay.
And you can even take your leave with immediate effect.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Yes, we're very embarrassed with what I must say. And then, what I'll do very quickly, I'm going to start with the last...
No. Chair, I thought that we had granted you, so... You what do you want to respond to now?
Oh, it's all the other questions.
No, all the other questions are in the document.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, Chair.
Yes.
Yeah. Chair, with respect, we've asked for clarity on a number of issues here, and I think they're important questions, and if they can answer them quickly, then we can be done.
No, but look, he's requesting to go and look at the document they've presented, reworking, because... Even if it gives those answers, it's not going to be in the document. Oh, you want him to answer what? Because he says they request to go and look at the document. Now, if they need to rework it, they want it 14 days. They said no. I give them up to Friday. So we have no document in front of us, as far as I'm concerned. Or is my understanding wrong, Chair? We have no document in front of us, agreed?
Yes.
Yes. So that's why I'm saying you answer no questions, you go and rework your document, you submit to us what is right, because we're sitting next to Tuesday to approve this thing, and by Friday morning, we must, by 11 o'clock, we must have your document so that it gets circulated to members, and then we'll have to look at the document on next Tuesday, with or without your presence. Whether they come back or not is another question. Because on that Tuesday we must approve our report that we are submitting to Parliament. It is a situation, there's little we can do about it, unless if members have got a much more creative way of us going about that situation. Mr. McKenzie, you're on the floor.
Thank you, Julie. Chair, I'm sorry, I'm a little bit confused as to why we're withdrawing these documents in their entirety. Is it because it doesn't have the minister's signature? I mean, I've engaged with these documents. I've got some questions on these documents, which I think can be answered here. As you say, we are pushed for time in terms of producing our committee report, and if we have to produce a committee report without USASA, I think we are going to be a found wanting, Chair, if they're not going to come back and present to us on Tuesday. I'm not convinced that we can't engage with the document as it's in front of us. I don't understand why. Sorry, Chairperson, I just need clarity on that.
Okay. Mama Julie?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I have a different view. I believe that the Chairperson of USASA has indicated to us that he's not sure which document we have in front of us. So we take it that they have made notes of our query. Now, can we then agree that we will reconvene next week, Tuesday, that USASA must have somebody on standby to answer any possible questions on the second document or the final document, but that we then proceed, because we are under very serious time constraints as parliamentary committee, that we proceed with our report, and in case some additional questions need clarification, then we can have it in that meeting before we adopt the final report.
Madam Sheen?
Thank you.
Chair, next Tuesday is a public holiday, so I'm not sure which parliament is operating.
When is our next meeting?
If we're going to engage with the document, we need to engage with the document that has been formally tabled in the House. So by next Tuesday, this document is not going to be tabled, assuming we do come back and work on it. That the document will not have been tabled in the House, so therefore we cannot actually engage with it.
No. Look, colleagues, we received the document. We are sending that document back. So the document has been tabled. It has serious errors. It must be corrected. We are sending it back. It's not going back to Parliament. It's going via ourselves to Parliament. So it's a simple and straightforward procedure. But if members want to engage on the flawed document, and then you're still going to engage on the reworked document, if that's what you want to do, it's fine with me, but you must understand what it means. You will have to go through the document that we shall have received on Friday this week, all together. We'll start it from page one up to page last. I'm a very flexible person. Mama Sotesi?
Yeah, taking from the recommendation by Honorable Kidan to say when we meet the second time about the corrected document, we should have anyone from USASA. I propose that we have a specific person who will be able to take decisions and answer questions and not say, I'm sorry, this one I cannot answer because my senior is not here, you know.
Yes. Our next meeting is on the 8th. I could see that they are. I thank you, Madam. I always want to work.
That's point for me, to permission. What I'll do as well, because there are questions that were related to document, and there were the other questions around our operations at USASA. So what we'll do, we'll put an addendum answering those questions as well to the satisfaction of members. You know.
Good.
Thanks.
Yeah. Fine. Colleagues, are we fine? Can we request them to leave?
as long as the proper parliamentary process is tabled, because the document that we need to engage with is one that has been formally accepted by and tabled by the minister in the ATC. So we need the new document to be tabled in the ATC before we can formally adopt it.
It's fine, but there is something that has been tabled before us. If we send it, let me explain. If we send it back, let's say it's a bill or whatever else, because this is a law-making process. If a bill is tabled with us and it is flawed, we reject it, we can come up with our complete bill. So it's a simple matter. They have tabled something that they also don't understand. They are taking it back. They'll bring it back to the committee, not to Parliament. We'll raise the thing in Parliament ourselves. That this is what happened. What has happened today will be going into our report. We received the document, we went through it, we're unsatisfied with it, we sent it back, it came back to us, and therefore, because that's what we'll approve, we won't approve something else. It's a simple procedure. That is a procedural issue. We've engaged with them, we've sent them out, and they will present that document appropriately through the channels, and we'll have the document. The ATC and the rest of our things. It means there was an ATC, the one they have, whichever way, I don't get into that administration. But in front of us, we don't have a document that we can work on. We're sending them out. And if there are those questions that are not part of the APP that members have raised, and I think something that I had indicated, we are supposed to be dealing with the APP, but indeed, we will not stop members from raising other issues that are not in the plan. I was looking at history. Will not stop members from raising it, but it doesn't necessarily form part of the document we have. And as the chair said, put an addendum, and then. But you may want to come back, but I think it's time that you also try and pay the cost of your pocket for failing this portfolio. Yes, because you are paid by the institution to come. If you come with wrong things and we send you back, it's time that you also feel the pinch on your pocket when you come down to Cape Town, so that we get the systems going. We can't just be having a holiday for nothing. But yeah, you are released, sir.
Okay.
And your team.
Yeah, with your permission, I think we'll then have to go now and start working on the documents.
That's exactly what I was saying.
Thank you. Thank
you. I almost said Swapo, but Sapo. Members can take us let break for half a minute whilst we are rearranging the sitting.
Another.
I did not make that rule. I did not make that rule. I was just sensitizing.
That's why. I won't go there. No, I'm sorry for that. You know what has happened? I'm sure when the communication with CEO, I don't know what happened, but because we'll give you all the opportunities for them. But we follow the law to speak to the chief, and it's not personal.
We were late. Sapo?
Sir?
Have you connected? Have you put your things on the... Sapo, you've been before us forever. We're looking at your APP, but I know that members have got a lot of appetite for other things, but you're on the floor, you have up to, your time has been eaten by your previous colleagues, you have time up to, from 10:30 to 11, where are we now?
11.
Is their time expired?
No.
Thank you.
But proceed. You've got 15 minutes.
As long as I don't have to pay for my ticket, I'll go now.
15 minutes presentation.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my name is Comfort Gidi. I'm the chairperson of SAPO. With me, I have the CEO, Mark Barnes, and our secretary, Dawood Dada. We were meant to have our CFO present as well, but unfortunately she had an unfortunate situation in her house, broke into her house, and she couldn't come with us. Yeah, but be that as it may, our CEO will take us through our presentation, and thank you for that. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair of the Committee and Honourable Members. Let me first express my gratitude for the rain yesterday. I believe we got 6.4 millimetres. That's a good thing. I think all members of the committee are familiar with this presentation, and as it was presented on the 20th of March. And so there's a lot of ground that's been covered. I would just perhaps like to give an updated perspective of where we are on all of these matters, and there's been quite a long discussion around the issues that have arisen out of this corporate plan already. I think that we've made the point clearly in this corporate plan that as we are currently structured, we're not financially sustainable. However, I think in rethinking the post office and its place in the South African society, we think it can be an investable opportunity. The challenge is to change a mindset from necessary bailout to proactive investment, and to be able to differentiate between when you're keeping something alive and when you're giving it a new life. And that's a point that we've come to in our thinking, and we've engaged quite significantly with DTPS and National Treasury in actual meetings since our last discussion. And I feel we're making quite a lot of progress on fundamentals in terms of that conversation. Our frontline, our technology, and we've had such wake-up calls when it comes to our delivery requirements contractually with SASA, where we have been able to deliver. I mean, I quote the case of Worcester, where there was a launch last week. I would encourage you to follow SASA on Twitter, because you get a really good running commentary of what's happening there. And you would have seen lots of videos of happy people who've got Postbank cards proudly. We're proud of that. I encourage you to go to Worcester branch, if you like. Quite an extraordinary experience of how a post office can work when the management apply their minds to it. So SASA, whilst it's been an extraordinary challenge for us, has woken us up to a lot of possibilities, and I'll come back to that a bit later. We have made extraordinary progress of understanding within government and ourselves about the necessity for partnerships. And as recently as Friday night, I've had communications from our DG to ask about what sort of investment partners we need to define. We agreed a three-month process for tabling that, which we agreed about a month ago, and I've been asked by the DG to make that much faster. So we will be coming up with real tangible proposals for equity and technology partnerships in SAPO fairly soon. At least the door seems to have swung open on that debate, finally. Postbank remains there's an article in the paper today about it. Postbank remains a bit of a mystery to me, to be quite frank. This is a bank that is way overcapitalized. We're sitting now on close to 8 billion in cash and near cash, which is sterile. We're sitting on a net asset value of 2.6 billion. We've got more excess capital than any bank in South Africa in terms of percentages, and yet I should place on record that our application for a banking license expires on the 27th of June, which is a year since we tabled it, which is 2 months away. And I can tell you that if we don't make that, the whole process is, I don't know if you've got those three keys on your computer, Control, Alternate, Delete. Okay, that's where we go to. We go to
start again. And it is astonishing to me that we haven't made the progress that we have on that. And it's a big piece of our purpose, let me put it that way. And it is obviously the center of the SASA debate. So we wait with eager anticipation for the powers that be to make progress on that. I must tell you that, and I'm talking it off because you've all seen this presentation, I mean, on government business, on the back of what I would now describe as our success in SASA, we have been, for the first time, approached with tangible government business in the post office. It's overwhelming, to be quite honest. I'm not at leisure to give you the specifics because some of those contracts are in the private sector, which are going to be brought to the post office for consideration, obviously through proper due process. But some of them are big. And for the first time, I've seen government officials, proper official, you know, at the highest level, coming to see me with and asking us for proposals on how we could take over contracts that are expiring that are with the private sector. We see that as an extraordinary victory and something that really justifies the fight that we continue to have on a daily basis about SASA. You know, on the sort of three-pronged strategy that we have, you know, government business, I think we've earned some ground, and there are some real tangible money-making opportunities in front of us. On the post bank, I need advice. And on the core business, I'll talk to you on the next page. We, for the first time in March this year, achieved a 91% adherence to delivery standards. That is from a position of 35% delivery standards in 2014 after the strike. That doesn't mean it's 100%, and Honourable Kinsey made the comment earlier about a risk matrix that's 75% full. 91% means there are 9% that are not getting their post. You know, and so, and those are the 9% I hear about. And so we're aware of that. Are you familiar with all of these numbers? We are saving on almost all cost levels, but precariously so, in the sense that the savings have resulted in a reduction of business or a holdback on staff increases, which I'll get to in a minute, bit later. You've seen, I'm on slide 4 now, you've seen our projections, which say that if we do nothing, and to clear a point that perhaps I didn't communicate clearly last time, our forecast's revenue contains no unfounded projections. So everything that's there we know is going to happen, as much as one can know these things, but this is our baseline revenue that we projected with no ambition in it, so to speak. And so we are a company that, if left to its ways and our post bank, will have a loss of 1.2 billion a year, which will grow every year. But that's not how it has to be. And this does include R1 billion worth of network upgrade. What could happen, and where we've made significant, we had an extraordinarily good meeting with National Treasury on these principles. And I'm not saying we've signed off on anything yet, but there's a recognition of certain principles that was not there before. Let me start off with the staff optimization cost benefits. We had a board meeting yesterday at SAPA, where we tabled a number of things. And I don't want this to become a public debate until we've solved it internally, but we have on the one hand a situation where there's a widespread request for increases, and on the other hand there's an absolute necessity to trim back the staff if you want to be profitable or sustainable. Now, we find ourselves in an extraordinarily difficult position where the rest of the SOEs in South Africa have had, over the past 3 years, increases of in excess of 20% on a compound basis. Six, seven, seven, whatever it is. If you compound it over the last 3 years, they're all over 20%. SAPA, over the last 3 years, has had 6.5% increase, roughly a third of all of our peer group. And so we have this dual pressure, which is that there's a political pressure, there's a sort of pressure that we are employees as government, and we are employees of the post office. I spend extraordinary amounts of hours with the unions on the fact that we don't have money, and until we've got money we can't pay salaries. In fact, the only way we would increase salaries is if we were to reduce staff. And that dynamic has been the subject of a huge debate yesterday at board, and we'll be taking it up with the minister, obviously. I mentioned SASA. I've got to say that there's been a sea change in SASA and our relationship as a result of change of ministerial and IMG oversight. We're grateful for the initiatives that Minister Shibangu has adopted and the change of approach towards the partnership. And also Minister Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, as chair of the IMC, has been very proactive in promoting the intra-government delivery of services. So it's changed our life in terms of how that thing gets thought about. And we haven't put a lot of money in terms other than SASA in terms of our plans going forward. But if I were, and I'm not going to until they're real, but I would be inclined to look more positively at all of those forecast numbers than we did even as short as a month ago. The public service mandate has become a clear, unequivocal debate that if we are required to, and I don't want to quote National Treasury specifically, but I think there's a recognition of the principle that if we are required by government to perform government services on their behalf, those should be paid for. And so I see a sea change happening in that, which goes to our sustainability in our various other forms, and I think that's going to happen. I've talked about, given my 15 minutes, Chair, I've talked about the staff optimization. We really are trying to do it differently, not just get rid of people, but redeploy them. SASA presents an opportunity. I think we've had to, for the next 4 months, we've had to deploy something like 1,500 people into various pay points and things. But on a more sustainable basis, there'll be 750 or so people that are deployed into that. And as other government initiatives mature, we'd expect the same sort of reskilling. And I'm going through strictly because I've discussed it before, we want to create economic units and redefine the concept of employment in South Africa. So we want owner-drivers instead of people who are delivering on behalf of the post office. We want to have franchises instead of branches where that's appropriate, where we have branches that would accommodate and so on. So I think there's an extraordinary opportunity, even through the staff rationalization process, to take a voluntary service package and use it as an initial funding mechanism to create an entrepreneur that was previously an employer. Our funding requirements, I'm on page 7. We've submitted and are in continuous debates with DGPS and will submit to the final submission to the Minister within the next 24 hours of our total funding requirements, which I set out on that page. I mean, essentially we have a situation where we are in arrears with creditors. We are able still to pay salaries this month, but we operate, I get a daily liquidity report. I just got one 10 minutes ago. I get a daily liquidity report on and from a liquidity perspective, we find ourselves in a position where we have to think far ahead and plan. That same position exists whilst we have an enormous amount of sterile capital within the Postbank Group. I mean, in the Postbank Group, we've got 2.7 billion of unencumbered properties, and we've got 2.6 billion of unencumbered cash. When I say unencumbered, I mean the net cash above depositors in the bank. So we're sitting on 5.5 billion of sterile capital because we can't get a Postbank license, and in part. And so we've got money that's earning 4% after tax, 8 billion of it, 8 billion rand sitting on deposit, earning net 4% after tax. And we're borrowing at 10%. There's something wrong with that. and the reason why a lot of this capital is sterile is because we're waiting to see what's going to happen to the bank. And we don't touch the bank until we know. But I mean, it's become inappropriate to think that way. And we need to think of the group. And for example, the post office group has provided Postbank with a tax shield forever, because we've got losses at the top, and so the Postbank's never paid tax. So we could argue that we've given them that, and so we need to look at deployment of that excess capital before we need to look at borrowing more. I mean, that's the principle I'm making. We're sitting on sterile capital, 6 billion, and we're borrowing money. That's incongruous as a business concept to me. So I'm also just trying to be wary of time. Those are some investment of capital expenditure opportunities which are frankly necessary, and they're included in our just to keep us just to keep us competitive or attempt to be competitive. I've talked about this sterile capital. It's a big issue in my life. We are not insolvent by any stretch of the imagination. We've got 3.6 billion of net asset value, but we do have a liquidity challenge, and we will require, my latest close estimate is, we will require support in one form or another of 1.451 billion in order to sign off on liquidity as at the 31st of March. However, if it is that we be able to persuade government of the public sector mandate, and if it is that, and we are in the process, we have board support, although we haven't finalized the terms, if it is that we are able to issue two corporate bonds, which I talked to you about, the retail bond against the properties, or even mortgage the properties to some extent, we will be able to raise all of the funding that we need going forward within the next calendar year, by the 31st of December. So if we raise a SARPO bond, and I've talked about that, I mean, essentially it's incongruous to me that National Treasury underwrites SARPO to get money from the banks, but you're not underwriting SARPO, you're underwriting the banks. So Standard Bank makes a risk-free loan to a government, which the government guarantees. So, I mean, which monopoly capital are you supporting here? So we would argue that you should underpin us, and we should issue those instruments so that our clients and citizens can have an 8% instrument that they can go and invest in at the post office like they used to. So we're winning those debates, and we've got a property portfolio which we're not going to sell, but we're happy to look at it as an instrument for raising capital, particularly because of the tax efficiency of our SAS loss. I can tell you, it is my view, I don't want to step out of line, but when SAA sold all of its assets, it became a price taker forever. And so we don't want to sell our birthright, which is our footprint and our properties. And so those are the engagements we're having. I've talked about the bonds. This slide on page 11 you're familiar with. We are now even engaging in the possibility of equity investment at the top of the diagram, directly into SARPA. I can't give you any of those details because they're not yet finalized, but there are real discussions happening about public-private sector partnerships in technology and in capital. And our challenge is not whether or not there are things like that out there. Our challenge is whether we're smart enough to negotiate the right deals with enthusiastic, particularly international enthusiastic capital and things like e-commerce. Well, I think we have made it clear to the board that we will get that expertise. If I can talk to the annual performance scorecard, the KPIs, those revenues, as I say, or baseline revenues, going to number two, to achieve regulated mail delivery standard of 92%, we're 91% of that 92% as of March, but that was a blip. We're more like 70-75% on a running basis of the 91. In absolute terms. We've achieved the uptime for ATM and POS transactions. We talk about getting to 100% here within 7 days. That isn't, in my view, an accurate description of the problem. The problem is how long did the problem exist before we started working on it, not how long have we worked on it for. So we'd like to rethink about that, because sometimes the problem gets to my desk when it's already a month old. And so we need to find an earlier problem identification thing, not just solve it quickly. We're above a forecast on our expenditure targets, so we'll be within those expenditure targets. The regional operations infrastructure that is in play, that is being worked on, Telkom BCX, we will achieve the post-bank revenue. In fact, we're quite a bit ahead of it. And that's just because of the interest rate environment that we find ourselves in, and because there's nothing much else to do with the money. We have been growing our post-bank accounts in line with that projection, and obviously this excludes SARS, there'll be a lot more growth when that takes place, and various other government initiatives which are coming to us. You'll see that in our corporate plan revenue growth we've not got much, because what we're not putting in there is some stuff that we're not completely certain about. As far as the adherence of performance and management targets, we are at 96%, whereas previously I think we were at about 70%. So we've had a massive tidy up there, and obviously the target is 100% or no less, but we are at 96% at the moment. In terms of our retail branches, the point of sale procurement process is in place, and we commissioned that in July. So, and again, that's been driven by the necessity to comply with the SASA contract, and it's got some other, there's an invisible hand of things happening. As far as the norms and standards, we've asked SASA to redefine them, because there wasn't a standard that we, and once we've got that back from them, which should be shortly, we will get all the branches that are going to be involved up to that standard. So we're on track there in terms of 11. Under audit findings, we didn't get a positive report in the Auditor General's review, and I've analysed it, and I've got a copy of it here. I don't know whether it's a good or a bad thing, but the things that are wrong with us is that our information is not complete, that some of it's not reliable, and it points to internal management shortfalls, quite frankly, we have this disconnect between, internal and compliance processes and business units providing them with the appropriate, timely information. In a way, it's positive because it's a management problem, not a systemic problem. It's getting the management to produce the numbers on time. That is slightly better than having, wrong numbers. But I accept it unequivocally. We're in the red zone. Mdu Zakwe, who chairs the audit committee, has got a zero tolerance for audit findings. I think our next audit committee meeting is in a couple of weeks. And we've all been set extraordinary tasks to try and come up with an unqualified set of accounts. The one thing that we see very little of is anything of concern in terms of corruption or fraud or, malprocesses of an economic consequence. I do think that it is clearly understood in the post office that there is an absolute zero tolerance for that kind of thing. And so, I'm encouraged by that, but I'm obviously not satisfied with the fact that we haven't performed. So in my 15 or 18 minutes that I'm going to table that for now. Thank you.
Indeed, 18, Mr. Bal. Colleagues, Barbara McKenzie, I know that you presided with Nomsa. Nomsa and McKenzie, Mama Killian, Mama Shing, Mama Sotese.
Thanks, Mr. Barnes. If I can just refer to this document rather than your presentation, on page 6, you're talking about looking at the option of setting up a fund for universal services as a funding requirement for the post office, that government's looking at this. Can you give me more information on that fund? Where do you see the peers with the Digital Development Fund? The government seems to have tagged onto this thing, that it's a nice way of raising revenue to fund entities. Where do you see the funding for that coming from? Who will be paying into that fund? And on what sort of metric will you use to define contributions? You talk about, and it's very concerning for me, in terms of the Post Bank and its June deadline, as far as I understand it, the only thing that's holding you back on that is the changes to a piece of legislation, an amendment. And in this, on page 8, you say there's nothing to suggest that this stalemate in terms of the bank controlling company structure will change. What is the stalemate, or is that a wrong choice of word? If we're just waiting for that amendment, have you been given any indication from Cabinet when that's likely to be tabled, or from the State Attorney? Then on page 9, you talk about the 30% of government business, which has been an important part of your strategic turnaround plan. That was a Cabinet instruction, as I understand it. So, firstly, why you did allude to it, but why hasn't that materialised? Are people willfully ignoring instructions from Cabinet to allocate government business to the SABA?
then you talk about an optimal staffing cost structure, and I'll cover that, come to that again later in the presentation. The chairperson of the board following the 2014 strike, that was part of his cost-cutting measures that he announced he would introduce after 2014 to cut back the staff. And you cut back from, and I'm just picking numbers as I have them in my head, from over 22 or 23,000 people down to around 18,000 at the moment. How much more staff can you actually cut until you reach a point where your organization is critical because it doesn't have enough people to actually do the job that you're supposed to do? So how much more room is there in that? And clearly staff cutting, you mentioned staff morale, it's obviously having an effect on people if job security is at stake. Then on page 10 you talk about international delivery service. And at the moment, Mr. Barnes, that seems to be all the complaints that I'm getting. And you know, your staff are responsive when it comes to dealing with these issues. Maybe these fall into the 9% that aren't being catered for. But people are saying that, you know, they've posted parcels using EMS, and these things sit. There's some sort of backlog that's stopping these parcels being shipped internationally. There is a reference to SAA letting you down in this document. Is that to do with an SAA problem, or why aren't these parcels being expedited timeously? Then on page 12, I found this slide very interesting, the revenue less subsidy versus cost, showing that the SAPO actually, according to the way the trend on this graph, SAPO actually broke even in 2006, made a profit in 2007, broke even again in 2008, and broke even again in 2011. So what were they doing in those years that would allow them to break even, and what has changed since 2011 that makes SAPO hopelessly unprofitable? I mean, I hate to say this, but let me just throw it in for the record. Mackenzie's been saying since 2014 that those customers were not going to return to the post office, and that you also wouldn't achieve your revenue targets on post boxes, on the renewal of post boxes. So with almost a schadenfreude, I just put that on the table. And I just use my personal experience. In terms of funding a public service mandate, when the post office was receiving a subsidy, that subsidy, and again it's a loose figure, was around 250 million rand a year. Why have you funded a service mandate almost three times that amount? Can you just give me an indication of what you used to work out that figure? I think you've covered your properties. Who's responsible for the maintenance on post office properties? Is that Public Works, or does that fall into the laws where you've answered that?
Are you done, Mami?
No, sir. I've just, you know, this. I love this post office. I love it as much as you do, Mr.
Barnes. I see that, but let's mind our time, because we have very limited
time. The only chance I get to really engage with this thing. Honourable Mackenzie, you do a good impression of not loving this. No, I do. I've always been very supportive. You know, Mr. Barnes, I'm very pleased to see there's innovation in this plan going forward, including, and in fact, I've put in questions on that. In terms of your owner-driver scheme, have you actually implemented that? And if you haven't, when would you intend on doing that? And how many numbers are we talking about here? How many people are we talking about? And have you started that process? And the same with the franchises, the 200 branches. Have you identified those branches? Can you tell me the people that are interested in taking this over, and what sort of financial implications there are for the post office? And you said over a three-year period. Can you tell me, can you just break that down over the years to give us an idea of what we're talking about? I might not be here next year to actually hold you to account on that one.
I'll do fire.
Well, one never knows, Chair. I could be dead. I could be dead. Just on page 24, you talk about resolving SAA non-delivery. And that's why I think that was impacting your international non-delivery times. Perhaps you could just look at that. Then, also on page 24, you say the cost of the public service mandate where appropriate by replacing some branches and free street deliveries with post boxes. That was done years ago as part of a post office cost-cutting plan, correct me if I'm wrong, especially in urban areas where street deliveries were stopped and post boxes were then, you know, people were encouraged to take those post boxes. I believe there was also no charge initially for that post box. Would you intend on doing the same thing? Then in terms of e-wallet, you've actually budgeted a lot of anticipated revenue for that e-wallet, and you say it's mostly commercial bank. Well, I think I'll take some informed with you a moment ago. MTN have an e-wallet offering, and I presume other mobile companies would be very interested in getting into that space. Haven't you, you know, perhaps missed the boat on that one, given that other people are quite active in that? And of course, just look at digital currency, the amount of e-wallets that are available for that. Your revenue, unfortunately, you don't have, you say target revenue year 1, 2, and 3. There's a massive revenue spike, almost double for digital certificates. Why do you get that kind of jump in revenue and then sort of flat lines from year 2 and 3? I'm just interested to know why you would double the revenue there. My colleague made some reference to our own work, so I'm just showing it that I've actually done on my own work here.
It's 20 minutes that you've consumed, Baba McKenzie.
20?
Yes.
No, Chairperson.
All he wanted is 15 minutes of silence.
I've still got a half a thing to get. Well, can I have a second bite if the questions are not covered?
If we still have time, because we have to manage time. But Mama Killian, I'll give you Baba McKinley.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Chair, I know that we have a challenge as far as the liquidity is concerned. But Chair, I must say, from the perspective of changing to a new tact, I'm very optimistic. And I trust that with the successful sort of implementation of the SASSA grant system, SAPU has in fact corrected the reputational damage that they've suffered over a significant period of time. Secondly, I want to suggest that, and I know I'm not part of any negotiating team for salaries, but the point is, we have had a very bad cycle, and it was a protracted one, and it almost killed us completely. So I think it is important that we in fact consider the fact that, you know, you have to tightly balance the upskilling, the downscaling of the staff complement, but also it must be linked to performance bonuses. So to what extent have you developed that sort of performance management plan? Jay, because the sooner one would move to quantifiable targets, I understand that it's probably very difficult because you have so many outlets. But to a certain extent, when we visited some of the post offices, it was really visible where you could see where they were chasing specific targets. It was there. Some of the branch managers were behind the counters, etc. And all of that will contribute to improved performance of software. Chair, I want to suggest that the very, very serious nature of the post-bank issue is now compelling us as a portfolio committee to not stand back. And I hope that my colleagues will support me to suggest that it is time for your self to move towards a meeting with the minister, the portfolio chairperson of finance, Karim, and also even the minister. It's a simple one-liner that needs to be amended before the end of June. We all know we're going to go into election mode sooner in election rather than later, but this
will be a severe dereliction of duty of this Parliament if we participate in any further strains on already, can I say, challenged institution with a lot of potential, but we simply cannot get the legislative framework correct. That would really be a very bad reflection on Parliament. So I would really like to ask that, and that my portfolio members support me on that proposal, that we also now as portfolio committee move forward and see to be counted. Chair, if I have listened, just one last remark. I have noted what Mr. Barnes said about the Auditor General's comments. I believe, however, that is probably another element of staff upskilling in terms of the technical indicators. Because ultimately, to move any institution forward, you really need to have quantifiable targets and see progress. So perhaps that is something that you could see. So as far as the public mandate is concerned, I do believe government will come to the party, chairperson, because if you cannot have an institution that was supposed to have protected SAPU against competitors, such as ICASA, not fulfilling its duty, and then resulting in competitors all over the show, and we don't fund the public mandate, which is going out to the rural areas. Chair, I would like to stop there so that my other colleagues can also make.
Mama Sheen.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll set the record for brevity. First of all, I think that this committee owes Mr. Barnes a great accolade for the courage that he displayed in actually stepping up to the plate for the post office. I mean, no one else in South Africa would be that mad to do this. And he's brought with it tremendous innovation and passion that I think is unseen in any committee. And so if the post office is saved, I think it'll be totally thanks to Mr. Barnes. But I would just, my colleagues have asked most of the questions that I wanted to do, which was few to start with, but I'm assuming that the fund that we're talking about, Mr. Barnes, is the Digital Development Fund that's going to be funding the 800 million a year social mandate that you have. Is it the Digital Development Fund? Because if so, that's years away from implementation. It's something else. Okay. That's stage six of this. So it's just that, if it's a separate fund, that'll be great, because I have a feeling that government is going to be using the Digital Development Fund to fund the IT rollout of all government, as a cash cow for all government stuff. I'll leave it there, and I wish you luck with your bonds. I think that's an excellent idea, and your public-private partnerships. So all power to your arm, and may government finally come to post office's rescue in actually changing the way it's formulated post office, that it actually realises that you're a commercial entity first. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to echo the same sentiment, about the situation of SAPU. Whenever you read the document, you sort of despair, but you listen to the CEO presenting, you regain your hope. Yeah, come again optimistic. And I would like to know your page 2 of the summary. Yeah? I have other questions to the master copy, but unfortunately I forgot in the office, but I still remember the others. On page 2 of the summary here, that apart from SASA, I'm just thinking of the magic that will apply to convince, the potential partners to join us and make sure that we improve further than where we are now. And the other one, the last bullet on page 3, about the salary that is remaining inappropriately high. Is there a plan to rectify without tampering with the labor law, the situation? And in the master book again, coming to the human resources reorganization process, there's a statement whereby you say other employees will be redeployed to other offices where there's a shortage of staff. But one is thinking about unintended consequences, whereby there will be the increase of transport costs, especially after the strike. Transport costs will be increasing when salaries are not increasing. They may not raise it now, but I think moving forward, there will be some issues about the salary not increasing, but transport costs being increasing. But otherwise, it's a prudent move to deal with the excess staff in other offices. And coming to scanners, that there's a shortage and need to buy more. And there's also a statement to say there's going to be training of employees on how to use the scanners. But the few that we have, are they, you know, in a good condition to scan effectively? We may have some, you know, few numbers, but want to find that they're not doing what they're supposed to do in as far as scanning is concerned. And about reducing the offices and coming up with the postal boxes, also a wise move. But previously, there was not very long, there was a presentation regarding, you know, non-payment or low payment of these postal boxes. Now coming with the idea again, how are we going to strategize to encourage people to pay for the boxes? And the driver scheme also say it's really a prudent move, provided the vehicles are in good condition and roadworthy. You know, when you address issues of unemployment, whenever there's an opportunity, people will come to the vehicle, want to find that they're not in good condition. And it will be a little bit of a drawback to us. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Mackey, oh, Mama, you're on the floor.
That's one question. Do you have people who've got a capacity to go to such a thing? Thanks, Chair.
Dr. McKenzie. You have, how much time do you want? I want to time you.
About 24 minutes, yeah. I won't be longer than that. I can guarantee that. Now be fast, Chair. Just on page 31 of the main document, you talk about separate companies. Is that like an African bank type model that you have in mind? So you split the post office into a good post office and a bad post office, because you can only find funding for the good. I think my concern with separate companies would be the expenses involved in that, in the establishment of that, and the time to set them up. What sort of, if you got the cabinet go-ahead for this, what sort of time frame do you have in mind to set up these two different companies, or I presume two or three different companies? Then your courier business, which you talk about, of hiring off again as a separate company. Didn't we go through this exercise where we had Courier Freight Group as a company, established as a company with its own board, it then went bankrupt because it wasn't able to do its job. We then bought the assets from the liquidator, put it back into the SAPA as part of a holistic entity, and now you want to set it up again as a separate company. Aren't you going backwards with that? I was a little bit concerned on page 33 to talk about the PIT as a funding partner. And I think the PIT is taking a lot of flack at the moment. They should be taking a lot of flack for their investment in independent online. So I would suggest that the PIT as a funder needs to, given that it's government money or private money, needs to be approached with some caution. Perhaps you could help me out. I'm not a chartered accountant. I don't know how your figures are put together. Your staff optimization exercise, you've actually got it in your financial summary on page 35. It's sort of staff optimization cost benefit are added into your revenue. How did you... Perhaps I'm reading this wrong, but I'm very interested to see how that number comes in, because if you remove that number from the financials, the picture becomes very different and a lot worse. So, I mean, you've got for 2018-19, you've got 187 million of staff optimization cost benefits. What, perhaps you can just explain that to me, and it goes up to almost 800 million and A35 in 2021. I think the growing concern issues being covered. Nearly done, Chairperson, nearly done. Then on page 41, you have a comment, you say that SA Post Office will endeavour to achieve, that's another word for try. I think when it comes to plans, you either do it or you don't. This is do or do not, there is no try. Then, your retention of prior revenues on page 43 as a goal, you go from 4.6 billion, 4.67 billion, and then down to 4.48 billion. You get an annual increase from the ICASA that's legislated. This retention of prior revenues, does that take into account that annual increase? So you're just talking rand value rather than volume?
Half a minute.
One more, thank you, Chair. I should be able to finish on time. I am done. Thank you.
Thank you. just from my side, I think to restate the issue the colleagues have raised, and I hope that the board, in this case, who are each chairman, it's important that you hear the sentiment that members have expressed. It's not seldom that you get members from across political parties appreciating the effort of your CEO. But I think that matter has been conveyed, and I hope that the board, you can take advantage of that kind of support to make sure that you propel your organization to its destiny. And so is it with the ops manager, or COO. We met her once here dealing with matters of SASA, and we were quite impressed about her outlook, their knowledge of the company, and the efforts they are putting to get the company run. It's very seldom to find such people, especially in the public entity. So handle them with the best of care and support. Mr. Barnes, you made mention of you said you've got something where you've reworked as to how you deal with issues from the AG. I think would appreciate to have sight of that intervention. Because it helps to help other organizations with the kind of approach that is being used. And I know we had designed one as a portfolio, and we circulated to entities. I would like to see what yours is happening. And just try and response. I know you can talk forever. You and Mackenzie belong to the same WhatsApp group. But let's hope that you can.
Thank goodness not.
Let's hope that you just give it a few minutes so that we can handle the last entity.
I'm not sure this is working.
Oh, it's now off. All of it. Oh, Mackenzie, let's use your. Oh, no. There's the problem.
There we go. There
this
we go.
Connection.
No,
just connect that one from the back.
This is the one that connects the two.
It connects up to us. Yeah, please let Mr. Mackenzie help. He broke it.
Damaging government property.
No, you can keep it. Now that you can.
Thank you for all the questions, honourable members. I'll try and be brief. The question of a fund for the USO is more a matter of principle than a specific fund. We've requested the government to see this as something which is not visited every year on a pay-for-the-past basis, but proactively building up a sinking fund to deal with public service mandates as a matter of national treasury. It's got nothing really to do only with the post office. So we said, we can't come to you every year. The trouble with National Treasury is it depends on the circumstances of the day. If they haven't got money, it doesn't matter what your cause is. So we're saying that's wrong. If you know that there's this liability of 800 million coming, we need to start funding it in a sinking fund of some sort, whether, a public service. So it's a matter of principle, not a specific fund. First, may I go, there are two issues actually. The one is the law, which is a trivial one-line amendment to the Act, for whatever reason that hasn't gone through. And the other one is the capitalization law, the bank controlling company discussion, which we also think is not difficult to address, and we've sent three or four alternatives months and months and months ago and revisited them and so on. I have to say that there's some impediment, there is some purposeful impediment to this process, in my view. There can be no other logical explanation for it. And one of the impediments, we believe, was that National Treasury was of the view that the banks, the commercial banks, should pay SARSA grants and not Postbank. And we've convinced them otherwise, and the commercial banks have likewise convinced them otherwise, I think. And there is this enduring concern that if we were to authorize a bank owned by a government institution like Post Office, which has got $8 billion in cash, that there's a risk that there would be reckless lending and cronyism and all of those. That accusation has been made to us inside the Reserve Bank publicly by an official of National Treasury in front of all of the other banks to which I responded. So, but we either have got to employ people that we trust or close it down. Take the bank, if that's what you want. But we can't leave it sterile. So we've got sterile $8 billion of government money. If you're not going to use it in the bank, take it and use it somewhere else productively, for goodness sake. Now, the staffing numbers, I'm going to be very quick on this. So the staffing involves 4,000 people. These numbers are very sensitive. 4,000 people, which is about 20% of our current staff, which would be a saving of about $800 million per annum. The reason why it's only $180 million in the first year is because it will only be in place for the first 6 months. And there's $313 million required to effect the voluntary severance packages. So the first year, there's no big effect. But it's 20% of our staff. Where does that number come from? It comes from two directions. The first one was that we looked at what our optimal staffing should be. You must remember, our volumes are down 40%. And so the staff complement should be kind of down 40%, even more if we had appropriate technology. That's where it comes from. But there are two other main reasons. We inherited 5,000 people as a result of corrupt labor broker practices. And we took them on as full-time staff. We didn't need them. And the second one is, gratuitously and not commercially, we took on the staff from CFG, which was 700 people. If it was an entirely commercial and not political decision, we would have let CFG go bankrupt. But we didn't. On the international thing, it is our biggest bugbear and our biggest opportunity. That's the problem. I mean, OR Tambo as a functional modern facility would be an extraordinary money generator. The trouble is it's behind the times. So, you know, one of the main problems that we have there is that our scanners are so damn old, and so we spend, some of them can't even read properly, so they read 80% of the numbers. You will know from accounting or any other discipline of reconciliation, you have to be 100% reconciled. If you're 99% reconciled, you could be 100 million out both ways. So we spend every night, I'm not exaggerating, there are people in finance that spend every night reconciling manual imbalances, manually, from scanners that have read a number wrong, or from one of the barcodes and so on. And that's some of the delays. The problem with SAA was actually some of the other posts, so Mozambique Post, for example, didn't pay the SAA account, so SAA refused to deliver, so we had to put trucks to take to Maputo. We meet them at the border. That same happens in Lesotho, in Swaziland. We meet them halfway. Sometimes their trucks come here, sometimes our trucks go there. There is a practical stitching together on the ground of postal delivery in this country. Literally, we do it on the ground. We do it every day. In the earlier years on this break-even discussion that you had, I think, first of all, the subsidy went until 2011, it was $300 million. And secondly, the volumes kept growing. Yeah. We were in a different environment, a digital has always been there, but it's manifest now. It's actually, these smartphones are going to be commonplace. They're going to not look like this, but in 3 years' time, the smartphones will be at the lowest common denominator of society. We maintain our own properties, I don't want to get too granular here, but on Thursday last week I was taken on a tour of the ladies' toilets, personally. it's disgraceful. You know, we have to go there and look for bins and these kinds of things, you know. And we haven't done anything about the owner-driver schemes yet, but we have we have existing entrepreneurs, you know, the people that are using post office buckies for their own business generation. They really have shown an entrepreneurial flair, if I could call it that. They deliver posts for the first 2 hours, and the other 8 hours they're delivering packages and possibly catch them.
Planned,
so they know what they're doing. We just have to help them finance the purchase of that bucky and that bicycle, and they'll do it. And I tell you, we're learning on France, on the branches, is that's PostNet's model. I mean, yeah. PostNet only pay on delivery, and so it's a built-in performance scheme, and it's got the motivations of entrepreneurial ownership and share ownership and so on. And we've got 200 branches where we think there's some mainstream branches where we couldn't do that because the flow is too obvious and too voluminous to gift it to someone. But on the small, where we've got agencies and so on, those are mom and pop stores, man. I met a guy on the plane yesterday. He tried to persuade me to move forward to seat 11, but I was in seat 24C for the record, man. And he was saying he wants to talk a joint venture with us because he owns hundreds of little retail stores like at Lanseria and that thing. And people are starting to talk about the post office as a foot flow attractor. And so we see those sorts of things intersecting with our owner, driver and franchise models. There's always been a debate about do you get free postbox delivery or free street delivery. In this modern world, free street delivery is not the answer, free postbox delivery, but it requires a redefinition and sharing of what is a postbox. So a postbox is not just for letters. A postbox is where you collect everything that is movable into a box. And we are not in a world, if you think beyond our lives, into the lives of our entire population, physical addresses are not what it's about. Collection points are about. Points of aggregation are what it's about. And data, technology are what it's about. We are approached almost weekly about solutions to do with e-wallet. So we are behind the curve, but we're not going to invent that. We're going to partner it. People are going to bring us solutions, you know. You mentioned the question of liquidity, Honourable Member Killian, but we don't actually have, if we were left to our own devices, we wouldn't have a liquidity problem. We've got lots of cash swanning around doing nothing. But, you know, we're sitting on blobs of cash that we're not allowed to touch. Well, you know, we could touch it, they're touching it, but we won't, not while I'm there anyway. So unless we do it formally and scientifically. I can tell you, and I'll make a statement, I can tell you what the solution is to the post office. Give it to someone to run. Not give it to them in terms of time. Just say, go do what the hell you like with it. You know? And if you're wrong, you're going to lose $3 billion, and if you're right, you're going to make $30 billion. I mean, I think that's, there are investors that speak to me every day. When I get off the plane yesterday, there's a guy who said, how can I invest in the post office infrastructure? I've got these, this was the general retailer guy. A little Greek guy who's got 40 or 50 little retail shops who wants to see how he can intersect with us. We need carte blanche. The post office is a tiny little thing. You know, it's not 600 billion in Eskom or 6 billion a year. It's a tiny little thing. It should be released within certain parameters to go and be a business. You know, because it's got all the capital itself. It's just not allowed to touch it for a variety of reasons. And if that doesn't include having a banking license, so be it. We can go and... This infrastructure is invaluable and underutilized. Okay, so we haven't really got now. I can tell you that if we don't find a solution to salaries and we do have a massive strike, it will be the end of the South African post office. There's not even a discussion. We will never come back. They'll cancel the SASA contract. If we go on a 4-month strike, it's over. And then we can just realize that. And maybe sometimes you think that that's the right thing to do. I'm dispassionate about it. You know, if it is that we're not going to invest in this thing, let's let it be realized gracefully. Let's take the capital out and redeploy it if you want. I've got no shares in the post office. We must do what's right for the country. But to keep it limping, you know, in war they say don't kill a soldier, wound him. You know, because it takes three people to look after a wounded soldier. and just a couple of people to bury a dead one. If this thing is not going to get healed, then let it die. But don't leave it wounded, because wounded is just going to suck money every year, a billion rands worth of the stuff. And it is not providing an answer to our society in its current form. We can't compete with anybody. You know, drive on the R21 and drive past DHL and RAM and look at their buildings, man. Come on, you're not going to come see us. Talking about Courier, we are relaunching Courier, but it's a different model completely. We're not doing our own Courier. We're wanting to partner with couriers who don't have access to the OR Tambo apron, for example, and who don't have customs inside them. Now, one of the biggest problems at JIMC, I mentioned it last time, is that we're an import-orientated rather than an export-orientated e-commerce destination. The UPU rules, and I'm going to Turkey next week sometime, and I spoke about this at the last CEO conference. There's only one event I attend a year, which is the CEO conference. It's a two-day conference. And again, we're talking about this as UPU. The country of origin gets all the money for a postal event. So we're the country of destination, almost entirely for e-commerce. We all import rubbish from China, India, and other places. You get a bloody earring that costs 49 cents in a parcel. It's a separate identifiable parcel. It has to be scanned. It has to be checked to see if it's below value for customs, above value for... China must become our partner, so that they are invested in this side of the equation and we can start sharing that economics. I'd rather have 50%, or for that matter even 30% of the top e-commerce facility in Africa than 100% of a dysfunctional receiving box. It's obvious to me. Postbank, you know, I don't know what I mentioned it already. In terms of the audit, we will be announcing, we've implemented some consequences management-wise, and those will become public knowledge in a matter of days, I think. Across the group, I did finally cross the line of recognizing that tolerance just defines lower standards, and so at some point you have to. So those changes have been made. What is the magic for our partners? They see an unutilized infrastructure. They don't see anything political about it, or anything, you know, they don't feel any of the pressures of compliance. They just see this massive infrastructure that they can sell their goods through or receive things through. I wish I could tell you which government organizations are approaching us, where we, as government, we receive cash, and as government, we dispense cash, and that circle could be filled by things where we're receiving cash as government and where we're paying cash as government. I mean, I've been overwhelmed by the people that have come to us from government now. I don't know why they came. Maybe you sent them. Thank you. SASA, you asked about capacity. We are performing in SASA. There was a SASA technical committee meeting this morning. There's a IMC committee meeting tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. Post bankers and post office have delivered on their deliverables. In fact, and again, I don't know when these things become public knowledge, but our role in SASA payments is being significantly expanded from our initial mandate, from things that we turned away,
okay,
which we've been asked to come and do. So it's a battle. It's a daily battle. I mean, I can, you know, I get a daily report on SASA, and the matrix is about this one. And there's a guy who's resigned twice so far, but I've been able to persuade, because I mean, I can tell you that SASA work started before light, and you can borrow my phone. That's the COO who's done an amazing job of leading that war. He's done an amazing job. And a guy called Henny from the Melbourne backs it up. And so that fight starts before dark, and it usually ends after 9 o'clock at night. Okay. And it's managing our partners with our partners, and trying to balance when we accept the mandate for something before we know we can do it. That's been our challenge. People say, can you do more? Can you do more? Can you do more? And we wanted to backfill what we can do before we accept what we could do. I think you're going to see, if I were to predict anything, I think you're going to see full partnership between SASA and SAPA on this, with less than 10% of the beneficiaries catered for in the private sector. That's what I think is coming, and I know this is the truth because I know the ministerial instructions, but they're not public knowledge. And we've got extraordinary support at last from the IMC, who are saying the post office is here forever. Why should anyone else be involved? And so that has been a sea change. In terms of separate companies, Honourable Member McKenzie, these are just to accommodate separate investor bodies. So there are people who would like to invest in e-commerce who have no interest in investing in the retail post office. So we would accommodate but control their separate investment into, be it a bank or into an e-commerce facility or into a joint venture. Now, a lot of people, even like Postnet, don't want to invest with us, they want to do joint ventures with us or sign SLAs with us. So there's no way, it's not a good place, bad place, it's just separating, I suppose, in that sense, the public service mandate from the commercial possibilities. And so you can't have someone invest in a commercial investor into a social mandate that doesn't tie up. So we have to separate those out in terms of who owns the shares. But we're not anticipating handing over or losing anything. Your point's made on, well made on the PIC. They're just an example who engaged with me and continue to do so as a possible investor. There are other government organizations, frankly, also engaging with us to come in and invest, believe it or not. The revenue decline, essentially we've got a 10% volume decline, which is counterbalanced by about a 6% ICASA increase in rands. So we've got a net 4% decline. That decline used to be about 10-14% 3 years ago. It's now 4%, but it's a declining business. It's an absolutely declining business. We have to replace which things flow through our system, not grow those things which are currently flowing through our system. But one day you won't go to the chemist to get your chronic medicine, because I'm sure you will be here next year, Kenzie. You'll go to the post box to collect it, and or with a scanner. The AG intervention is really not so much a system, but driven by a strong personality. Mdu Zaku is the chair of the audit committee. Takes no, I've got to find the right English word that's polite. He takes no trouble, takes no nonsense. And so when he says, this thing is, we've got 11 points here, there must going to be 0 points. Mr. Barnes, you're responsible for points 1, 2, and 3. It's management, actually. It's been a management thing. And so I'm expecting a much better result, although I say that caveated by the changes in management that you'll see. I've tried to answer the questions in a short space of time, Chairman, but it will come up. Thank you.
The support from the committee and all other parliamentarians is greatly appreciated. There are a number of things that you might see, and they don't derive from us, they derive from your support. Amongst others is government business, the attitude is improving, and is out of your support. I have my own doubt that they would have succeeded in SASA voluntarily. It was a lot of hard work from parliamentarians and also from management, which sometimes is not seen in the eyes of the public. The area where we also, I think we badly need their support is the next area, the post bank.
Yeah.
Because it's just, one cannot find a good cogent explanation as to why we're not succeeding. And one is of the view that perhaps a similar approach that we was adopted with SASA and maybe adopted at post-bank level to say that parliamentarians might take, if possible, take more interest and push a little bit the executive to do the right thing and officials, because there is no reason, but it doesn't happen.
Parliament, if I may just excuse me one point. You mentioned that it was a cabinet instruction, Honourable McKenzie. We think that some of these things need to be the subject of a cabinet member, you know, like the post bank, like the public service mandate. All of these kinds of things need to be deliberated, and if found to be logical, need to be the subject of a cabinet memorandum. Because we all talk about these things and everyone agrees about them, but no one takes it as an instruction. Thank you.
Thank you. Although our time has really, really gone.
Half
a second.
Yes, I've got a new question. It's just a concern I've raised that I see you have a good relationship with the trade union, and this prudent move of redeploying employees, you know, where there's excess. But in the long run, when there are increase in costs, is there a proactive plan as to how I'm going to mitigate that? Because it will come up, especially during elections, you know, so many things will come up. That I am so little, I'm moving from point A to point B, I was paying 10 rand. Now that I've been redeployed, I'm paying double the amount. Is there any proactive plan to mitigate that?
Mama Killian?
Okay. No, I just wanted to reiterate my point on steps that we should take as a portfolio committee, and I trust that you've heard me and it's not
very
necessary
well.
For other members to support the proposal.
I have taken the point and I'm making an attempt. I've already sent a text to the minister and the I'll do one for the chairperson, seeking to meet them urgently on this matter. So about half a second.
This is one of the unions, you know, I'm very engaged with them, but I can tell you it's becoming extremely difficult to ignore the other currents. You know, all I can say is that if we were to move people around, we'd have to take into account those sets of economics. But we do, we think like that. And I think the post office unions also realize that they have to hold it together to stay together. That 100 of us working is better than 60 of us working and getting an increase. Okay. And so, but it's becoming, I can tell you what the real issue, it's not the post office, I mean, people are broke. People have got no money to buy food.
Mm.
I mean, we've got a real, that's the issue.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Baba,
just one small question. In regard to physical addresses, Mr. Bond, in terms of the Post Office legislative mandate, establishing a national address register is part of that.
Yeah.
Are you still focused on that?
Yeah,
because I don't see it mentioned.
Sorry, yes, on where we are. I don't have the statistics in my head, but we've got quite significant movement in the address rollout program. I can respond to that to you in writing if you like.
Yeah.
I can note that, please.
Post office or SAPO?
Yeah. It's just a thinking, Chair, which I do not know if you'll have to help us going forward. In those that of us who are in the Republic and in the sector, on one hand, you have to tell employees, self-employees, for the past so many years, we cannot afford increases, we don't have money. But just across their colleagues working for other entities, they get an increase, and they are not making money as well. It becomes a difficult explanation on our side. How do you sustain that argument for
so if you could, we will need more time to engage Salo. Wamanje, we unfortunately don't have time on our side, but it's an important area of engagement. But what you may need to do as entities, because we structure our program on matters that we believe we want to get to deal with, but there is nothing wrong in you requesting to engage with us on a particular subject. So I'm just saying, if you think the portfolio, there is an area where the portfolio could be helpful in pursuing your agenda, communicate with the portfolio through Hajira, and then we can set up that meeting or adjust our program such that we're able to engage on that matter, because the issue that you are raising is a very, very important matter.
Chair, we've done the homework and we'll send you a one-page on this. We've done the comparison of all the state-owned entities and ourselves over the last 3 years, and our guys are sitting at less than a third of the state-owned entities in terms of state packages. In fact, a person earning 500 rand in SAPA 3 years ago is now earning 415 rand in real terms.
The figures that you've mentioned in your documentation, have you made provision for sort of a same type of percentage increase as the rest of the entities, or is it not there at all? So that needs additional motivation.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'll send you the documents in some form that we submitted to the board, which explains all of this.
Yeah, we have, Ajira, we must look at our program. You remember that other day
you're
talking about? Perhaps let's see whether we can't give them that space so that we really are schooled, so that we are able to take that matter in a much more educated manner. You are, we are done with you, Sapo. We are left
thank
with
you.
The last entity. Thank you very much.
Well
you.
Done.
Thank you.
We are inviting the BBI. Your 15-minute starts now.
Chair, it should also be noted, MBs didn't get increases for a number of years. I'm just saying.
There's fresh tea outside, colleagues, quickly. There's fresh water. And at least today, Mr. McKenzie, thank you for employing the services of security to guard our tea. Our tea is very safe. Some tea outside, please, yeah. Have a minute, let's just see whether our colleagues are trying to get some fresher tea. We'll be back in half a minute or so. Is it too long? Okay, a minute. Until they walk in, there comes the first one, you see. So the half minute does actually work. Did you leave the other two members at the few spot or they were
I
somewhere?
Saw them, but I think we can proceed, Chair.
Okay. Shall we?
Thank you, Chair. And one of the members, our team simply comprises of the CEO and the CFO, and we're not going to waste the time of the chair.
And you are the Chair?
I am the Chair. My name is Marla.
No.
This is my third term, Chair.
Hey.
Yes.
How many terms are you allowed to?
This is the last, because you can't do more than 9 years simply as a form of corporate governance.
But you, nothing bars you from continuing?
No, nothing bars you.
Okay. Well, so, if there's nothing wrong, you can always renew your mandate, presidential mandate. No, okay, thank you. Ute unqobo. Siyabonga. Kodwa ba unqobo ba kwabani?
Ama Apollo.
Ma Apollo. Oh, awesome. Cha, kuzwa ke. Ma Apollo. You can proceed, Ma Apollo. Or if CEO will do the
CEO presentation. CEO will lead the presentation, and then when it comes to finance, CFO will do
the right thing. So you know the timelines?
20 minutes?
Only 12. I give you extra 3, so you've got 15.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. In the interest of time, we'll do highlights of specific pages on the presentation. So the overall picture of BBI is that we have grown in terms of the traffic on our network, as well as the number of customers that we are serving. And we have also grown
our footprint in terms of number of POPs and the number of fiber kilometers in our network. If we move to slide number 3, there is perhaps a contradiction of sorts if the context is not understood, in that traffic and number of customers has gone up, but in the last couple of years our revenues have gone down, and that is as a result of a number of factors, one of them being in general in the our type of industry, the cost or the selling price per bit or per megabit that the market pays for has always been on a decline. We also went through a period in a previous financial year where we normalized the transactions between ourselves and Neotel, and that led to a revenue decline. Looking forward from 2018 to 2019, there is an upswing in terms of what we are projecting, but that upswing has got a contribution by SA Connecting. In terms of the performance of the service that we offer, we have experienced a slight decline in the financial year that ended last month due to specific technical issues in the network, but that is still above what we target and contract with our customers. Next page. In terms of a high-level overview of what the market expects, the market wants better and improving reliability in terms of the technical performance of the network, while the cost or what the market is willing to pay is going down. We are also anticipating that the future introduction of 5G is going to drive the requirements for broadband upwards. The key issues in the ICT industry is mobile traffic being continuously on the increase, and the spread of fiber to the premises. There is fiber going everywhere, and that is generally referred to as FTTX, where the X can be anything, business premises or a home, etc. And then one of the other activities that we is driving the market, our market in particular, is regional connectivity. We are engaged in extensive activity in relation to our neighboring countries. I have been to Botswana twice in the last month in relation to a business prospect that will bring significant traffic into the BDI network. And there is more expected from Namibia and Zimbabwe in the following month. I think the strategy map, let me not bore you with that, we can just skip that, it's in our report. The strategic goals that are in our APP, we we've sort of, in the presentation, done them in two parts. The first part, which is what we have now on slide 6 and 7, is just an indication of how they align with the objectives of the Department of Telecom and Postal Services. And then if we can move to slide number 9, yeah, which is where we now go into the details of our APP. And here we start going into the details of the financial numbers as well. And I will hand over to Ian van Niekerk, our CFO.
Thank you, Simon. Just on a high level, if we go through the APP, there has been a couple of nuances. I'll bring in some of those ones. But as you will see from the performance plan that board has crafted for us and the shareholders for the next financial year, there's still very much a emphasis on business sustainability, which is obvious from if you look at our numbers. So I think it's important that we maintain that emphasis and pressure just to make sure that we continue down the correction path. What we did try and do in this year's APP is to bring in a more balanced scorecard look and to bring in all strategic objectives into the plan, and that's why we brought in a couple of new ones. I'm not going to go through the detail one by one, maybe just highlight one or two of them. The first one being the very first one is a new one where we're trying to expedite and get the quarterly reporting out to our exco, which goes to ARC and board and so on, a bit quicker. The second one is the increase in revenue. You'll see the increase in revenue, and I'll touch on that a little bit more on later in the financials. There's an increase in revenue of 40%, and just to put that into perspective, as the CEO also said, that contains a portion of SA Connect, and that's the reason for the increase. So if we exclude SA Connect, the increase is only 18%, which is more manageable, and we have specific targets how we're going to meet that. We've also brought in a new target. The last one on that page on slide 9 is to pay SMMEs within 30 days. We have always been doing that, but I thought we thought about bringing it in specifically because we're going to, with the rollout of SA Connect, there's going to be a lot of emphasis in contracting with SMMEs. We wanted to make sure that we maintain that payment plan for that. If we move on to slide 10. It's about the resilience of our network, and the only new one is the number of government facilities that we want to connect for SA Connect. Am I too soft?
No,
I forgot to slide. So the one in the middle there is just the number of sites we're going to connect for SA Connect in this financial year, which is the 166 sites. If we go to the next slide, slide 11, talks to the economic and social transformation targets, and there's two new ones that we've brought in based on questions that we have been asked, and those ones specifically talk to spending on entities that have youth and disabled people in them. So we've brought back those two targets. They were there 2 years ago, and we brought them back now. And on slide 12, the last strategic objective that we've brought in, and from an APP perspective, is to manage our repeat audit findings and to target a clean audit.
Okay, if we move back to slide number 13, which is an overview of the CAPEX and refurbishment that we are planning in our network. The first one is upgrades address single points of failure, that SPOF, single point of failure, and do replacement of the adlash fiber that is still there on the portion of our network that is on ESCOM transmission lines. We're also doing investment in WECS, upgrading the West Africa cable system. There is some work that we need to do to protect the revenue on the N2 route between Durban and Cape Town. There is a lot of interest in that route from other players in the market. Some capex that is needed to maintain the current capacity of our network. In total, as a percentage of our capex, 53% of it is targeted at a generation of revenue going forward.
If we look at the financial performance of the company as set out in the strategic or the corporate plan for the next 5 years, the revenue, I think we've touched on the revenue is showing an increase of 40%. I think it's a conservative outlook from a year-on-year increase because some of the roll forwards, we mentioned it lightly that it takes a long time from when you start talking to a customer to when you actually sign that customer, but a lot of those are coming to fruition in this year. So I think the 18% increase that we are forecasting in the next financial year, with the capex that goes with that, I think it's conservative. And then that 535 also includes SA Connect, as I mentioned earlier on. From a cost of sales perspective, obviously that also includes the SA Connect portion, and that our net results then shows an improvement from the 2017-18 to 2018-19, and then going forward, it shows an improvement on the profitability line. Obviously, as soon as we move out of the 18-19 year, we've tried very hard in the last financial year to get access to capex to extend our network, and we have not been successful so far. We believe that we have started gaining some momentum, especially with the allocation of SA Connect and the discussions that we've had the last couple of months. And as soon as we are more clear on what those are and what they will entail and what the cost of them will be, we can be more aggressive on the forecasting of our revenue. So that's why the return to profitability is not as quick as what we want to project. But to be able to do that, we need access to capex, the one supports the other. If we turn the page to the financial position or the balance sheet, there's not much that I can say on this, except that the property, plant and equipment or assets will increase to about 1.4 billion as we roll out SA Connect. And as the CEO said earlier on, some of it will be to maintain the network, and it will be customer specific, and some of it will be for SA Connect. And then you'll see on the interest bearing debt that we did make provision that we'll have access to debt funding to fund the new rollout and also for SA Connect. On slide 16, it gives you an overview of our funding needs for the next financial year. And you'll see that there's a combination of a number of avenues that we are aiming for. If I start with the green one, the 38% funding, that 38% is mainly for upgrades and for SA Connect, and we are aiming more to get that money from DFIs, Development Funding Institutions. We have gone quite far, fortunately one of our shareholders fall in that category,
and we've gone quite far to get some access to some money in that area. We are positive that we'll be able to get that. 26% of that funding, we will target specific vendor funding to roll out our IP core network, which is part of the SAP Connect. We've issued the tender, and the tender closed on last week Friday, and part of that must include funding of the actual rollout of the network, so they'll have access to the securities that they will require in that sense. A portion of the funding that is required is also from a short-term funding perspective, which is also around about 26%. And that's mainly to provision services as and when required by specific customers, because you know we need to create that pool, if you like, to have access to quick turnaround money to provision services to customers, and that's also included in there. Then the next slide, on slide 17, I'll hand back to the CEO just to talk about the sales strategy.
In our previous appearance in the committee, we did mention that there is a particular focus on improving our top line through a sales plan. And amongst the things that we are focusing on is managing churn, making sure that we retain the customers that we have, upselling, in other words, adding more services to our existing customers. The critical one, which the CFO mentioned in explaining our CAPEX plan, is that the market is offering IP services, internet protocol services. So we are moving gradually from selling SDH legacy time division based technology to offering IP services to our customers, and also taking advantage of international traffic in terms of our works capacity and extending into neighboring countries. Then we also looking at new customers in the South African market, particularly the larger mobile network operators, where our share of their business is currently modest. We have a specific focus on increasing that. And then, of course, we have other markets, smaller players like internet service providers, some of them small, and our involvement in SA Connect gave us exposure. When I say us, meaning both sides. Some of the smaller IFPs, ISPs were respondents in our SA Connect tender, and as a result, even outside of the tender, are engaging us to be able to come on board, and we've got plans in place to help cluster them so that they aggregate their traffic into a bigger demand that can be worthwhile in terms of our service offering. Okay. And then the headcount doesn't increase much if you look at where we are now. You know, the biggest growth in headcount is in sales, and in the technical capacity that we need to implement Sales Connect. We're not growing anywhere else in terms of our headcount. And we obviously have specific areas of improvement that we need to achieve in terms of our employment equity profile. But the focus in terms of headcount is grow sales and implement SA Connect. If we can handle the governance one.
And this slide just shows that we didn't incur any regular expenditure for the years. And the next slide just talks about the external audit findings, but we report on that on a quarterly basis. So we only have one repeat audit finding and one finding that has not been addressed yet, and that's the going concern one on slide 20 right at the top. And obviously that one will stay there until we return to profitability. The next slide just talks to our strategic risks. There's not been much movement on those risks that has come from the operational risk onto the strategic risk register. So you know, it's things that we are managing, and that's within our control at the moment, and continue to manage those actively.
So in summary then, the focus areas, implementation of SA Connect, participation in the SOC rationalization, the merger with Centec, and the move towards the creation of a national net broadband network, and then growing sales, and then improving the performance of our technical network, as well as the service offering and that we offer to the market. And then the implementation of SA Connect, there's a group of in total 313 sites that we got the go-ahead to implement from the department in the middle of March, and we will be done with a significant number of them before the end of June, with the last ones in Umzinyathi municipality to be completed by September. We do have some sites that will be completed during this coming month of May. We haven't got a firm number yet, but they will be in the region of about 50.
Mama Julie, Mama Tate, Mama Shin, Baba, Mackenzie, you may proceed, colleagues.
Thank you. Yes, it is interesting to see that the customer base grew, but that there was not a commensurate growth in revenue. So clearly, at this stage, DBI is sort of almost in a holding position, and you can't dare to go backwards, but you must maintain and retain staff. Now, with that in mind, Chair, if we look at the headcount overview on slide 18, an issue that I wanted to raise with regard to the total permanent headcount. Has the entity placed a moratorium on the filling of vacancies and filling of positions in the staff complement? If so, what are the details? If not, why not? Chair, the argument that I have is it's good to see that they're driving the performance management system, which is now linked to salary adjustments. I wish many of the other public entities can do that. But I also have to commend them for taking in interns. It's good that you're creating that opportunity for young people with qualifications, but we need practical work exposure. My concern is just that, you know, we're going to face, Jay, this new entity in sooner rather than later, merger between BVI and Centric. What we very often find is that in situations like that, you would, as a result of uncertainty, lose critical skills and actually retain other skills. And once you merge, it becomes a burden on the new entity, because then those people who remain need further upskilling. And it's, you know, within this environment, it's so important to have people with appropriate and up-to-date skills. So just a question regarding the filling of vacancies and what your plan is going forward. You've made a note there that your business operations needed people with specific skills to address revenue generating challenges. Have you perhaps, if you have a laboratorium, created specific positions where you have people who could move into those spaces? Thank you, Jay. With that, I'm through. Thank you.
Master.
Thanks, Chair. Page 14 of the master copy. Oh, before coming to the page 10, the second paragraph under the board appointment. Can I get clarity on this one? Maybe it's my misunderstanding that you have a new appointee here and you have Ms. N. Slamlele again. N. Slamlele is the same person, or maybe there's a reason why you have And then page 14 on Vumatel, what would be the duration of the pilot project? And clarity again here, I say the fiber will be aerial, meaning it will be strung along the post rather than trenched. Is it not safe to have it trenched rather than being along the pole? I'm just taking two issues of safety. And again, we see the last line just below this one. This means that if 20 consumers maximize use of their lands at the same time, consumers can expect a minimum speed of 5 Mbps, meaning that the broadband speed will be very low. I think the existence of this technology is for it to be used maximally or optimally. And also it means more revenue on your side. And how are you going to manage the situation whereby we have more people using it without any interference, like it goes low when we have more than 20 people using it at the same time? And on the employment equity, that is page 11 of the master copy again, we're really not doing well on the disabled people. I mean, we've been having the transmission policy for many years, and looking at the age of the BBI as well, it has been there for quite some time now, for us not to be having, the implementation appropriately of this employment equity. And now we talk about the attraction of persons with disabilities, which is not prominent in the aspect. We are still going to amend it. Is it is there a problem, a really serious problem for you not to consider disabled people, or is just some kind of reluctance? Thank you.
Motion.
Thank you, Chair. On your document, on page 21, you talk about the department is busy formulating a business case for the establishment of the broadband company, which I presume is the integration of yourselves with Centec. Can you tell us when that business case will be completed? And one wonders why that, you know, we're emerging things without actually figuring out if it is, does make a sensible business case. Then we see that taking on the lead agency of SA Connect will increase your cost of sales by close on 22%. And you're also going to then also have to borrow money to be able to implement SA Connect. Why is this such an increase? Why is the cost of sales increasing simply to, and I see also the operational costs for SA Connect are high as well. Why is that? You know, when one knows that Telkom was initially identified by Cabinet to be the lead agency for SA Connect and they walked away from it because it didn't make business sense. I'm wondering whether SA Connect is actually going to be a millstone around your neck, whether you can actually afford the business at government rates. Because if one has a look at, there's confusion, and I think that Chair, I'll probably need to explore these further when we have a specific session on SA Connect, is the different figures here. Over somewhere along the line, it's just page 77, you do a prediction of SA Connect expenses over 5 years. And that's going to cost you about R1 billion. Yet on page 71, where there's three tables here of SA Connect phase one rollout, and I presume you're still just only talking about phase one, which now goes over 3 years, and the total of that is 648 million rand for phase one. And you have here, you're going to connect, now this is 313 sites you spoke about, is that over the 3 years here? Because this is a 3 year prediction here for SA Connect, phase one. So there's a total of 448 sites with your 313 and your 125. So I'm terribly confused as to what you're actually going to be implementing in SA Connect phase one, because it needs 6,000 sites. So A, you don't have the money for it, and B, you don't even projecting that you're going to be able to do the 6,000 sites. Also, what is your collaboration with Centec and with USASA on rolling out SA Connect here? Because, and then obviously CETA is involved here somewhere as well. So who is it going to be one global picture and you're going to be outsourcing it to CETA and all the other people? Or is everybody going to be doing their own thing here? Also, how much of your total revenue, including your projection for SA Connect, is actually government business? Who are your main customers? And how much is private sector here? Chair, I think I'll leave it at that. There's lots of other questions, but I think we'll focus more on the next session.
Thank you. Bob McKenna?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just on the main document, can you just tell me, I'm a big fan of positive cash flows as part of a sustainable business. Can you tell me why in this financial year you're moving into a negative cash flow position? And I see that continues until 2022 when you get back into positive. Can you just unpack that a little bit for me? And then, sorry, that's page 5 of your figures. And then on page 3 of that financial reporting, you talk about national revenue being 131. Can you tell me what that national revenue consists of, as opposed to anchor customers or SA Connect? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Just one more question I'd like to ask.
You on the floor?
Thank you, Chair. On page, I don't know what page this is. So it's probably page 5 of your financial notes. You talk about 0.88. Have you got the page I'm talking about? You've got it, okay. 0.8, deferred revenue, MTN, Liquid, Telecom, Seacom, Neotel, EST, Bofinet, CETA, other people. Can you please explain what that deferred revenue is?
Mama Doga.
Thanks, Chair. On slide number 11.
on your performance plan, on your economic and social transformation, there's a target there. You said you're going to adopt one school under service area. Can you name the name of the school, which area, and which criteria you're going to use?
Proceed.
Okay. On slide 16, you're talking about the project financing of 40 million for N2 refurbishment. Which area in N2? Which place? Because I have N2 in Eastern Cape, N2 in Durban, N2 in Cape Town. I don't know which one. And then, on your document, on slide 14, on page 14, by the end of the first quarter, which is in five, you said by end of the first quarter of 2018, Vumatele, what. Why you started in townships? What about the rural areas? Or do you have a plan for rural areas? Thanks, John.
Are you fine?
Okay, yes.
Colleagues, thank you. I will forego my time because we have to be out of this meeting in the next 12 minutes for members to go get their lunch and go to the chamber. So you're on the floor for less than 10 minutes, sirs. The organization that only has men. There's only one woman that I saw in your organogram.
And not disabled.
Which is very bad.
It's just changed. You always knew. Always for the cops coming in.
Then I won.
Five years in less by a female.
But you've got no female in your senior excellence. How many women do you have?
No, the board.
Leave the board out.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about administration. There's one woman. On your top management, you have one woman. There's one vacancy. Yeah. Proceed. Injongoba ngisho
nje.
Board is. We can give credit to the minister, not to the board. Because the board's work is this one that I'm querying. So the minister did the right thing. And you, the board, have failed to the entity. Correct it. We've got powerful women doing very well. We told you about the one at SAPO. I mean, she's changing things in that entity. So, but you can proceed with the answer.
Okay. The first question regarding moratorium on staff. There was a moratorium on staff for CFO possibly about two financial years before I joined.
Yes.
Going forward, we, as I indicated, we are focusing on capacitating ourselves on the sales side. So we technically no longer have a moratorium as such, but our recruitment is focused on salespeople for us to improve the top line and advance ourselves towards profitability. And then we've had to upskill as well to be able to implement this in college. So it's on those two focus areas. The impact of NBN, possible loss of skilled, this is unskilled people, that is a process that we have to manage as part of the migration towards NBN. But so far, since the cabinet announcement in December about the move towards national broadband network,
We haven't had any negative feedback in the team, and we part of the reason is that we do regular communication with our staff about the impact of the likely impact of NBN on the BI. I think there was a question about the border appointment.
Honourable member today is on Slamulet.
On Slamulet. If I let me just go to that page. I think with what happened is there was a board member, Anthony Kitsiari, whose term ended, and there was a reshuffling of the subcommittees of the board. Firstly, Meta Maponya also resigned last year, so Nokutula Silamulela became chairperson of Risk and Audit Committee. Lebohang Ramukoni of Social and Ethics Committee, and she has since been withdrawn by the IDC and replaced with another appointment. So in our future reporting, that is going to change. And the reappearance of names on that table is because at the time there were fewer board members, and they were spread around the various subcommittees. But subsequent to the completion of this report, the department has appointed three new non-executive directors. Two of them are women. So we have a board meeting next week on the 30th. I think following from that board meeting, the committees will be reconstituted. The question regarding Vumatel is a customer that we are targeting, and the narrative in the report is based on the information that they have shared with the market about their rollout in Alexander Township. So what we are planning is to link that Vumatel network into the BBI core network. The challenges in terms of that have been asked in terms of aerial versus underground fiber, contention of bandwidth, those are specific to an external entity. We were just trying to highlight that we have an opportunity as BBI that we are working on to then backhaul the traffic coming out of that network to the rest of the communication network. The question around the non-achievement of EE targets on for people with disabilities. It is an area of non-achievement. We acknowledge that. It is an area that we will be addressing going forward. The areas that we are currently focusing on in terms of sales and technical skills for implementation of SA Connect. Generally, they give a lesser pool of available candidates who are disabled. In my experience, the quick wins for PWDs in office-based type of positions, but we will be focusing on improving that area. Then, Honorable Shin, there was a question about the business case for NBN. The driver of NBN is DTPS. Perhaps DDG Shannon, they can comment on that one. We and Centec are participants in that process. It was felt by the department that since we are the affected parties, we are unlikely to be fully neutral in that process, and therefore the department is best served as the coordinator of our activities. CFO, the next set of questions have to do with the finances in relation to SA Connect. Can you handle those?
Yes, I can. I think we did say previously that we should have a session on SA Connect, and then I can explain it. But all the, I can assure you that all the numbers fire up and they make sense. But I'll try in a couple of minutes. But it's not easy because it, especially towards the end, just before we submitted the plan, it changed slightly in that we had SA Connect phase one, which was for the 6,135 sites, and then there was a reallocation by National Treasury, and the allocation was reduced quite considerably, and then we adopted a name called phase 1A, and that's why you will see, if you look at the CapEx spend in the one section on page 71, where the CapEx spend is quite high, but that's not cost, it's only CapEx which the capital program people employ. So that's still, if they roll out the whole phase 1A, because we're still positive that, you know, we can see the benefits as a country to roll out the whole of SA Connect. So the plan is still there to actually roll that out. But included in the financials is only phase 1A, which is for the 313 sites, or actually slightly more, it's 490 sites over the next 3 years. So that's what we've included in the financial numbers and the related CapEx that correspond with that. So those are the numbers that we have included, just some background to SA Connect. And the reason why cost of sales has gone up is because the biggest portion of the cost, besides the CapEx, for SA Connect is actually the last mile connectivity. And that's the big tender that we have gone out to contract specific service providers to provide that service to us. So it's those costs that's included in cost of sales, and that's the reason why it goes up. From an operating cost point of view, the cost is actually very small. It's just a couple of additional people to manage the network. So you'll see a spike in the people in the beginning, but those costs will be capitalized because we're rolling out a network, and then they'll go down, and then there are 8 or 9 people that will be permanent to manage the network that we have just rolled out and to manage the actual service providers. And then from a, I'm not sure why Telkom walked away from this. I'm not privy to that information. I think it's silly of them, because the benefit of this for the country is quite, you know, it's going to be enormous. But from a costing point of view for Broadband Infraco, I mean, we've done a 10-year analysis of the costs, and I mean, obviously all the funders that you are talking to, you know, interrogated the numbers. And from a board perspective, I mean, all three of us are board members. You know, we can't sign off on a business case that's going to be negative. So the business case is definitely positive. Otherwise, we will not be sitting here. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. 60% more or less. If I did a quick calculation now, is of our revenue forecasted for the 2018-19 financial year. Will come from government.
CFO, there was also a question about collaboration with Centec, USASA and CETA. The role of Broadband Infraco and that of CETA. Broadband Infraco provides the end-to-end connectivity for SA Connect, and CETA will run the services, internet access, email, and other applications on it. For our portion of end-to-end connectivity, yes, we do collaborate with Centec, and there is a plan underway where we will take over the sites that were, or the connectivity networks that were deployed by USASA, will move over to broadband Infraco.
The cash flow, why are we going negative? Certainly on page 5 of the cash flow. So in our funding slide, maybe it wasn't 100% clear, in there we did say that we need 100 million rand for working capital purposes. So we've included in our forecast data, looking at our customers, that the debtors payment days might increase over time. So we factored those in, and also just from a long-term sustainability point of view, to have access to a facility like an overdraft facility. So that's why we forecasted that we're going to go negative. It's part of the planning for funding of the rollout. So you'll see after the initial rollout of SA Connect, in the positive, the cash returns to a positive position. But it is interesting to note that from a cash flow from operations, so in other words, although our cash goes negative because we are rolling out a network, so if you look at the capex line is quite big if you look at 2018, it's 174 million, then 294 million, and then it stabilizes. But the cash from operations remain positive throughout, so we're generating a considerable amount of cash that we actually use partly to running up the network.
Then the last set of questions from Honorable Ndongeni. On our socio-economic activities, we have been sponsoring a school in Sishiehu in Limpopo for the past 2 financial years. We are the last activity that we did there was cyber security for them. So the plan this financial year is to adopt a different school. We haven't identified the school as yet. The criteria that we, or one of the considerations that we take is proximity to one of our hubs, so that it can be easy for us to provide connectivity to that school. But the school has not yet been identified. The next question was related to the N2 project in our CAPEX. In the connectivity market, there is currently a strong focus by the majority of the players to build a route from Durban to Cape Town. It is nicknamed the N2 route in the market. Broadband Infraco is the only entity other than Telkom that currently has fiber on that route. We have fiber that runs from Durban to around East London on Eskom lines. Then we go a little bit on Transnet railway lines, on the other side of between PE and George, and a little bit on Eskom, and then on Transnet railway line towards Cape Town. The topology, the layout of that network suits end-to-end traffic from Durban to Cape Town. It doesn't suit dropping off at specific points in the Eastern Cape province, or picking up new traffic in some areas of the Eastern Cape to Cape Town, or from one point to another within the Eastern Cape province. So the CAPEX that refers to the N2 project in our program relates to additional fiber that we would like to deploy to make sure that we can drop off and pick up new traffic according to the demand of the customers that we have already engaged. I think the other consequence of this CAPEX project is that it is going to enable us to do more for SA Connect. Although it's a program that is primarily targeted at the other industry players, especially MTN and Vodacom have got an interest in this. By doing the deployment, we will also be enabling the requirements for SA Connect in the Eastern Cape in particular.
1 minute to go.
One last question on deferred income, if I can quickly answer that. It's a type of service that we sell that we call irrefutable right of use. So when you sell connectivity to a certain portion of the network for 5 years or 10 years, and then normally it comes with a reduction in price, but you have application of that service to you for that period of time, and that's just the way that we account for it. So
that's like a data bundle, but it doesn't expire.
Exactly, something like that. But you must pay upfront for it.
And it has an upfront cash payment, which you don't recognize all at once.
From a revenue
point of view, it's spread over the period.
So just
share
just
one question. If you answer, I missed it. I couldn't be concentrating. But in terms of national revenue, as opposed to
national revenue, rather
than answer that question.
So the national revenue is just where everyone else sits. That's not an anchor customer or specific a WAX customer. So it will be all other ISPs. So under national customers or anchor customers will be CETA, okay, and other. National customers will be all the national mobile and that operators for.
Baba Shalembe, you have the last bite.
Very quick one, say on the business case is on our APP as a department. We are scheduled to complete it end of the second quarter, and all the data is going to be internal process for our.
Colleagues, I guess that brings us to the end of our meeting, and apologies for my pressure on almost everyone, and I think we've not given everyone sufficient time, but it is only the time that we have. The meeting stands adjourned. Let's meet in the chambers. It's a voting day today, quite a few things to deal with, and thank you, Chair, and your contingent, and thank you, Baba Shalembe, and Nebangala.
What can
do to mobilize?
Everything must touch that tomorrow. If I leave in
to help me. I just want to ask them. It's in my constituency. And I just feel if there is any entity in the government that can come in and look at the situation. Because it's a government as to how we make it work.
I will be there.
I mean, it's a manual system. And after they do things, they have to transport their documents for 300 that can be done
electronically. When did the venue of the meeting change?
I think perhaps we can facilitate our infrastructure people on the infrastructure side, but we still can, because Twitter is responsible for e-government. Just as we go there,
the department, perhaps I will then have to engage the department and listen. I'm going to re-interview, I'll speak to the National Department and see whether there's anything that can show. I shouldn't feel that I'm getting into their space.
I don't know, maybe I just will buy all of them. Here we go. This is the three. And then I'll send it to Pumla. Okay. Where can I find the system? I didn't get the... What is it?